Chapter 51. Pandora. Hours after Cassius has left me, I'm woken from a restless dream by Severo. He calls my datapad with an urgent message. Victra has engaged Antonia in the belt. She requests reinforcements, and Severo's already got his gear and has Holiday mustering a strike team. Mustang, the Howlers, and I hitch a ride on the remaining Telemannus torch ship, the fastest left in the fleet. Seffi tried to come along, eager for more combat, but even after the victory at Io, my fleet rides on a razor's edge. Her leadership is needed to keep the Obsidians in line. She's a peacemaker, and the punchline of Severo's favourite new joke. What do you say when a 7.5-foot-tall woman walks into a room with a battle axe and tongues on a hook? Absolutely nothing. Personally, I'm more worried that only a handful of strong personalities bind this alliance together. If I lose one, the whole thing might crumble. We go full burn, straining the ships to reach Victra, but an hour before we arrive at her coordinates amidst a thicket of sensor-disrupting asteroids, we receive a brief encoded message that is patented Julii. Pitch captured, Kavax free, victory mine. We shuttle over from the lean Telemannus torch ship toward Victra's waiting fleet. Severo picks nervously at his pant leg. Victra's won a great victory. She set out in pursuit with 20 strike craft. Now she possesses nearly 50 black ships. Fast, nimble, expensive craft. Just the sort you'd expect of a trading family. None of the hulking behemoths the Augustuses and the Bellona favour. All the black ships bear the weeping, spear-pierced son of the Julii family. Victra waits for us on the deck of her mother's old flagship, the Pandora. She's splendid and proud in a black uniform, with the Julii sun upon her right breast, a fiery orange line burning down the black pants, gold buttons sparkling. She's found her old earrings. Jade hangs from her ears. Her smile is broad and enigmatic. "My goodman, welcome aboard the Pandora." Beside her stands Kavax, injured yet again, with a cast on his right arm and res flesh coating the right side of his face. The daughters who raced ahead to find him flank him now and laugh as Kavax bellows a hello to Mustang. She tries to maintain propriety as she rushes to him and tosses her arms around his neck. She kisses him once on his bald head. "Mustang!" he says happily. He pushes her back and lowers his head. "Apologies, deepest apologies. I cannot stop being captured."
"Just a damsel in distress," Severo says.
"It seems the case,"
Kavax replies.
"Just promise me this time is the last time, Kavax," Mustang says.
He does.
"And you're injured again."
"A scratch, just a scratch, my liege. Don't you know I've magic in my veins?"
"I have someone who's been dying to see you,"
Mustang says, looking back up the ramp. She whistles, and inside the shuttle, Pebble lets Sophocles go. Claws clatter behind me, then under me, as he races through Severo's legs, almost knocking my friend down, to jump onto Kavax's chest. Kavax kisses the fox with open mouth. Victra cringes.
"Thought you were in trouble," Severo grunts up at her.
"I told you I had it under control," she says.
"How far behind is the rest of the fleet, Darrow?"
2 days.
Mustang looks around. "Where's Daxo?"
"Daxo is dealing with rats on the upper decks. Still some hardcore peerless left. It's been a bitch digging them out," Victor says.
"There's barely any wreckage," I say.
"How did you do this?"
"How? I am the true heir of House Julii," Victor says proudly. "According to Mother's will, and according to birth. Antonia's ships, legally my ships, were run by stool pigeons, paid allies. They contacted me, thought the whole fleet was right behind my little harrying party. They begged me to spare them from the big, bad Reaper.
And where are your sister's men now? I ask.
I executed 3 and destroyed their ships as an example to the rest. The disloyal praetors which I could capture are rotting in cells. My loyalists and mother's friends have taken command.
And will they follow us? Severo asks gruffly.
They follow me, she says.
That's not the same thing, I say. Obviously, they're my ships. She's one step closer to taking back her mother's empire. But the rest can only be done in peace. Still, it gives her an eerie independence, just like Roke had when he gained ships after the Lion's reign. It will test her loyalty, a fact Severo does not seem entirely comfortable with. Mustang and I frown at one another.
Property is a funny thing these days, Severo says. Tends to have opinions.
Victor bristles at the challenge. Mustang inserts herself.
I think Severo means to say, now that you have your revenge, do you still intend to come with us to the core?
I don't have my revenge, Victor says. Antonia still breathes.
And when she does not? Mustang asks.
Victor shrugs.
I'm not good with commitment.
Severo's mood sours even more. Dozens of prisoners fill the ward's cells, most gold, some blue and grey, all high-ranking and loyal to Antonia. A canyon of enemies who glare out at me from the bars. I walk alone down the hall, enjoying the feeling of so many golds knowing I'm their captor. I find Antonia in the second-to-last cell. She sits against the bars of the cell that separates her from the adjacent one. Aside from a bruised cheek, she's as beautiful as ever. Mouth sensual, eyes smouldering behind thick eyelashes, as she broods under the brig's pale lights. Her willowy legs are folded under her, black-nailed hands picking at a blister on her big toe.
I thought I heard the Reaper swing, she says with a seductive little smile.
Her eyes drift slowly up the length of me, eating every centimetre up.
You've been downing your protein, haven't you, darling? All big again.
Don't fret. I'll always remember you as a weeping little worm. You're the only bone riders left alive in the fleet, I say, looking at the cell adjacent hers. I want to know what the Jackal's planning. I want to know his troop positions, his supply routes, his garrison strength. I want to know what information he has on the Sons of Ares. I want to know what his plans are with the Sovereign. Are they colluding? Is there tension? Is he making a move against her? I want to know how to beat him. And most of all, I want to know where the bloody damn nuclear weapons are. If you give me this, you live. If you do not, you die. Am I clear? She didn't flinch at the mention of the weapons. Neither did the woman in the adjacent cell.
Crystal clear, Antonia says. I'm more than willing to cooperate.
You're a survivor, Antonia. But I wasn't just talking to you. I slam my hand on the bars of the cell next to hers, where a shorter, dark-faced gold sits watching me with raw eyes. Her face is sharp like her tongue used to be, hair curly and more golden than last time I saw her, artificially lightened, same with her eyes. I'm talking to you too, Thistle. Whichever of you gives us more information gets to live.
Devilish ultimatum, Antonia applauds from the ground. And you call yourself a Red.
I think you are more at home with us than you are with them.
Isn't that right?
She laughs.
It is, isn't it?
You have an hour to think it over. I walk away from them, letting them stew in it. "Darrow," Thistle calls after me, "tell Savro I'm sorry. Darrow, please." I turn and walk back to her slowly. "You dyed your hair," I say. "Little Bronze Age just wanted to fit in," Antonia purrs, stretching her long legs. She's more than a head and a half taller than Thistle. "Don't blame the runt. Unrealistic expectations." Thistle stares out at me, hands clutching the bars. "I'm sorry, Darrow. I didn't know it would go so far. I couldn't have..." "Yes, you did. You're not an idiot. And don't be pathetic and claim to be one. I understand how you could do it to me," I say slowly. "But Sevro was supposed to be there. So were the Howlers." She looks at the ground, unable to meet my gaze. "How could you do that to him? To them?" She has no answer. I touch her hair with my hand. "We liked you, the way you were." Chapter 52. Teeth. I join Sevro, Mustang and Victra in the Briggs monitoring room. Two techs lean back in ergonomic chairs, several dozen hollows floating around them at once. "They said anything yet?" I ask. "Not yet," Victra answers. "But pot's stirred and I've cranked the heat." Sevro's watching Thistle on the hollow display. "Did you want to talk with Thistle?" I ask. "Who?" he asks, raising his eyebrows. "Never heard of her." I can tell he's wounded by seeing her again, wounded even more because he tells himself to be hard. But this betrayal by one of his own howlers cuts at his core. Still, he plays it off. Not sure if it's for Victor, for me, or for himself. Probably all three. After several minutes, Antonia and Thistle drip with sweat. Per my recommendation, we've made the cells 40 degrees Celsius to amp up their irritability. Gravity is jacked up a fraction too, just outside the realm of perception. So far, Thistle's done nothing but weep, and Antonia has been touching the bruise on her cheek to see if any lasting damage has been done to her face. "You need to come up with a plan," Antonia says idly through the bars.
"What plan?"
Thistle asks from the far corner of her own cell.
"They're going to kill us, even if we give them information."
"You weeping little cow. Pick your chin up. You're embarrassing your scar. You're House Mars, aren't you?"
"They know we're listening," Sevro says. "At least Antonia does." "Sometimes it doesn't matter," Mustang replies. "Highly intelligent prisoners often play games with their captors. It's the self-confidence that can make them even more vulnerable to psychological manipulation because they think they're still in control."
"You know this from your own extensive personal experience being tortured?" Victor asks. "Do tell me about that."
"Quiet," I say, turning up the hollow's volume.
"I'm going to tell them everything,"
Thistle's saying to Antonia.
"I don't give a shit about this anymore."
"Everything?" Antonia asks. "You don't know everything."
"I know enough."
"I know more,"
Antonia says.
"Who would ever trust you?" Thistle snaps. "Matricidal psychopath. If you even knew what people really thought about you..."
"Oh, darling, you can't really be so stupid."
Antonia sighs sympathetically.
"You are so sad to watch."
"What do you mean?"
"Use your head, you little simpleton. Just try, please.
Slag you, bitch."
"I'm sorry, Thistle," Antonia says, arching her back against the bars. "It's the heat."
"Oh, syphilitic madness,"
Thistle mutters, now pacing, arms wrapped around herself.
"How base," It's in the upbringing, really.
I consider pulling Thistle out, extracting the information she's willing to give. Could be a ruse, Mustang says. Something Antonia designed in case they were captured. Or maybe my brother's play. That'd be like him, to sow misinformation. Especially if they just let themselves be captured.
Let themselves be captured? Victor asks. There's over 50 dead golds in the morgues of this ship who would disagree with that statement.
She's right, Severa says. Let it play. Might make Antonia open up more when we get her in a room. Antonia closes her eyes, resting her head against the bars, knowing Thistle will ask what she meant by use her head. And sure enough, Thistle does.
What did you mean when you said, if I tell them everything, I'd have no more use?
Antonia looks back at her through the bars.
Darling, you really haven't thought this through. I'm dead. You said it yourself. I can try to deny it, but my sister makes me look like the village cat. I shot her in the spine and played acid drip with her back for almost a year. She's going to peel me like an onion.
Darrow wouldn't let her do that.
He's red. We're just devils in crowns to him.
He wouldn't do that.
I know a goblin that would.
His name's Severo.
Is it?
Antonia couldn't care less. Point's the same. I'm dead. You might have a chance, but they only need one of us alive for information.
The question you have to ask yourself is, if you tell them everything, will they still keep you alive?
You need a strategy, something to hold back, to barter incrementally. Thistle approaches the bars that separate the women.
You're not fooling me.
Her voice becomes brave.
But you know what? You are done. Darrow is going to win, and maybe he should. And you know what? I'm going to help him.
Thistle looks up at the camera in the corner of her cell, taking her eyes off Antonia.
I'll tell you what he's planning, Darrow. Let me make...
Get her out, Mustang says. Get her out now.
No,
Victor murmurs beside me, seeing what Mustang sees. Severo and I look at the women in confusion, but Victor's already halfway to the door.
Open cell 31,
she shouts to the techs before disappearing into the hall. Realizing what's happening, Severo and I rush after her, knocking over a green who's adjusting one of the holoscreens. Mustang follows. We break into the hallway and run to the brig security door. Victor's hammering on the door, shouting to be let in. The door buzzes and we fly in behind her, past the confused security guards who are gathering their gear, and into the cell block. Prisoners are shouting, but even then I hear the wet thwop, thwop, thwop before we make it to Antonia's cell and see her hunched over Thistle, her hands through the bar that separate their cells drenched in blood, fingers gripping Thistle's curly hair. The shattered remnants of the top of the howler's skull bend around the bar as Antonia jerks Thistle's head toward her and against the bars between them one last time. Victor shoves open the magnetized cell door. Antonia rises, grisly deed finished, bloody hands held in the air innocently as she bestows a little smirk upon her older sister.
Careful, she taunts. Careful, Vicky. You need me. I'm the only one left with information to sell. Unless you want to stumble into the jackal's maw, you'll...
Victor breaks Antonia's face. I can hear the brittle snap of bone from 10 meters away. Antonia reels back, trying to escape. Victor pins her to the wall and beats her, machine-like and eerily quiet, elbow pumping back, driving from her legs, just as they teach us. Antonia's fingers claw at Victor's muscled arms, then go limp as the sound becomes wet and muddy. Victor doesn't stop, and I don't stop her, because I hate Antonia,
and that dark little part of me wants her to feel the pain. Severo shoves past me and launches himself at Victra, pinning her right arm back and choking her with his left. He sweeps her legs and takes her backward to the floor, locking his legs around her waist, immobilizing her. Released from Victra's hold, Antonia flops sideways. Mustang lunges forward to keep her head from cracking on the sharp edge of the welded metal bed pallet. I kneel and reach through the bars to feel Thistle's pulse, though I don't know why I bother. Her head is caved in. I stare at it, wondering why I'm not horrified at the scene. Some part of me has died. But when did it die? Why did I not notice? Mustang is shouting for a yellow, the guards picking up the call. I shake myself. Severo's letting go of Victra. She coughs from where he restrained her, shoving him away angrily. Mustang bends over Antonia, who's now snoring through her shattered nose. Face a ruin, bits of teeth littering mashed lips. Except for her hair and sigils, you can't even tell she's a gold. Victra leaves the room without looking at her, pushing through the grey guards so hard two of them fall down. Victra! I call after her like there's something to say. She turns back to me, eyes red, not with rage, but with a fathomless sadness. Knuckles frayed open. I used to braid her hair, she says forcefully. I don't know why she's like this. Why I am. Half of one of her sister's broken teeth protrudes from the meat between her middle and ring knuckle. She pulls the tooth from her knuckles and holds it up to the light like a child discovering sea glass on the beach, before shivering in horror and letting it clatter to the steel deck. She looks past me to Severo. Told you. Later that day, as the doctors tend to Antonia, the sons go through Thistle's personal effects in her suite aboard the torch ship, the Typhon. Under a false bottom in the cabinet, they find the stinking, cured fur of a wolf. Severo chokes up when Screwface brings it to him. Thistle cut her down, Clown says as the remaining original howlers loiter around the room. Mustang gives them space, watching from the wall. Pebble, Screwface, and Severo are with us. When Antonia was crucified by the jackal at the Institute, Thistle cut her down. I'd forgotten, I say from her desk. Severo snorts. What a world! Remember when you had her fight Leah when Leah couldn't skin the sheep? Trying to make her tough, Pebble says with a little laugh. Severo laughs too. Why are you laughing? Clown asks. You were still off eating mushrooms and howling at the moon back then. I was watching, Severo says. I was always watching. That's creepy, boss, Screwface says drolly. What were you doing while you were watching? Wanking in the bushes, obviously, I say. Severo grunts. Only when everyone was asleep. Gross. Pebble wrinkles her nose and tucks the howler cloak in her pack. Howl on, little Thistle. The kindness in her eyes is almost too much to bear. There's no recrimination, no anger, just the absence of a friend. Reminds me how much I love these people. Clown and Pebble leave, hand in hand, Screwface taunting them all the while. I smile at the sight as Severo and I linger behind. Mustang still hasn't moved from her place at the wall. What did Victra mean when she said, told you? I ask. Severo glances at Mustang. Ah, it doesn't matter anymore. He acts like he's going to leave, but hesitates. she called it off.
It? I ask.
Us.
Oh. I'm sorry, Severo, Mustang says. She's going through a lot right now.
Yeah.
He leans against the wall.
Yeah. It's my fault, Prolly. Told her...
He makes a face.
I told her I... loved her before the battle. You know what she said?
Thank you, Mustang guesses. He flinches.
No. She just said I was an idiot.
Maybe she's right.
Maybe I just read too much into it. Just got excited, you know.
He looks at the ground, thinking. Mustang nods at me to say something.
Severo, you're a lot of things. You're smelly, you're small, your tattoo taste is questionable, your pornographic proclivities are... eccentric. And you've got really weird toenails.
He swivels to look at me.
Weird?
They're really long, mate. Like, you should trim them.
Nah, they're good for hanging on to things.
I squint at him, not sure if he's joking, and carry on as best I can.
I'm just saying, you're a lot of things, boyo, but you are not an idiot.
He makes no sign of having heard me.
She thinks she had poison in her veins. That's what she was talking about in the brig. Said she'd just ruin everything, so better just to cut it off.
She's just scared, Mustang says, especially after what just happened.
You mean what's happening?
He sits against the wall and leans his head back against it.
Starting to feel like a prophecy. Death begets death begets death.
We won at Jupiter, I say.
We can win every battle and still lose the war,
Severo mutters. The Jackal's got something up his sleeve and Octavius only wounded.
Scepter Armada is bigger than the Sword Armada, and they'll pull the fleets from Venus and Mercury. We'll be outnumbered 3-1.
People are gonna die.
Probably most of the people we know.
Mustang smiles. Unless we change the paradigm.
Chapter 53. Silence. After Mustang details the broad strokes of her plan to us, and we finish laughing, analyzing and dissecting its flaws, she leaves us to ruminate on it and departs to rejoin the rest of the fleet with the Telemannuses. We stay behind with Victra and the Howlers to interrogate Antonia and oversee ship repair. The beautiful Antonia is a thing of the past. The damage she suffered was superficially catastrophic. Left orbital bone pulverized. Nose flattened, crushed so brutally they had to pull it out of her nasal cavity with forceps. Mouth so swollen it makes a hissing sound as air goes between her shattered front teeth. Whiplash and severe concussion. The ship doctors thought she was in a ship crash until they found the imprint of House Jupiter's lightning crest in several places on her face.
Marked by justice, I say.
Severo rolls his eyes.
What? I can be funny. Keep practicing.
When I question Antonia, her left eye is a swollen black mass. The right peers out at me in rage, but she cooperates.
Perhaps now because she thinks threats against her carry a bit of merit, and that her sister is just waiting to finish the job.
According to her, the Jackal's last communique stated he was making preparations for our attack on Mars. He gathers his fleet around retaken Phobos and recalls Society ships from the Can and other naval depots. Similarly, there's an exodus of gold, silver, and copper ships away from Mars to Luna or Venus, which have become refugee centers for disenfranchised patricians.
like London during the First French Revolution, or New Zealand after the Third World War, when the continents brimmed with radioactivity. The problem with Antonia's information is that it's difficult to verify. Impossible, really, with long-range and intraplanetary communication essentially back to the Stone Age. For all we know, the Jackal might have prepared contingency information for her to give us, in case she was captured under duress. If she uses that information, and we act on it, we could easily be falling into a trap. Thistle would have been crucial to our understanding of information. Antonia's murder of her was horrific, but tactically very efficient. Holliday joins me on the bridge of the Pandora as I try to make that contact. I sit cross-legged on the forward observation post, attempting to log into Quicksilver's digital data drop again. It's late night ship time. Lights dimmed. Skeleton crew of blues manning the pit below, guiding us back to the rendezvous with the main fleet. Shadowy asteroids rotate in the distance. Holliday plops down beside me. "Fortify thyself," she says, handing me a tin coffee mug. "That's nice of you," I say in surprise. "Can't sleep either." "Nah, hate ships, actually." "Don't laugh." "That's got to be inconvenient for a legionnaire." "Tell me about it. Half of being a soldier is being able to sleep anywhere. And the other half?" "Being able to shit anywhere." "Wait, and to accept stupid orders without going manic." She taps the deck. "It's the engine hum. Reminds me of wasps." She wiggles off her boots. "You mind?" "Go on." I sip the coffee. "This is whiskey. You catch on quick." She winks at me boyishly. She nods to the datapad in my hands. "Still nothing?" "Asteroids are bad enough, but society is jamming everything they can." "Well, Quicksilver gave them a run for it." We sit quietly together. Hers isn't a naturally soothing presence, but it's the easy one of a woman raised in the agriculture backcountry, where your reputation's only as good as your word and your hunting dog. We're not alike in many ways, but there's a chip on her shoulder, I understand. "Sorry about your friend," she says.
"Which one?"
"Both. You know the girl long?"
"Since school."
"She was a bit nasty, but loyal."
"Till she wasn't," she says.
I shrug in reply.
"Julie is rattled."
"She talked to you?" I ask.
She laughs lightly.
"Not a chance." She pops a laced burner into her mouth and lights up. I shake my head when she offers me a drag.
The ship's air ducts hum.
"Silence is a bitch, isn't it?" she says after a while. "But I guess you'd know that after the box."
I nod. "No one ever asks me about it," I say. "The box."
"No one asks me about Trig."
"Do you want them to?"
"Nah.
I never used to mind it," I say. "The silence."
"Well, you fill it with more things when you get older."
"Wasn't much to do in Lycos, except sit around and watch the darkness in Lycos."
"Watch the darkness. That's so badass sounding."
Smoke jets out of her nose.
"We grew up near Corn. Bit less dramatic. Shitloads of it as far as you could see. I'd go stand in the middle of it at night sometimes and pretend it was an ocean. You can hear it whispering. It's not peaceful. Not like you'd think. It's malevolent. I always wanted to be somewhere else. Not like Trig. He loved Good Hope. Wanted to enlist at the local precinct for policing duty, or be a game warden. He'd be happy kicking it in the backwater till he was old, drinking with those idiots at Lou's, going hunting in early morning frost. I was the one who wanted out, who wanted to hear the ocean, see the stars. 20 years of service to the Legion. Cheap price. She mocks herself, but it's curious to me that she's choosing to open up now. She found me here. At first I thought it was because she came to console me, but there's already whiskey on the squat woman's breath. She didn't want to be alone. And I'm the only one who knew Trigg, even a little. I set my data pad down. I told him he didn't have to come with, but I knew I was dragging him along. Told Mom that I'd take care of him. Haven't even been able to tell her he's dead. Maybe she thinks we both are. Were you able to tell his fiancée? I ask. Ephraim, right? You remembered. Of course. He was from Luna. She watches me for a moment. Yeah, F's a good one. Was with a private security firm in Imbrium City. Specialized in high-value property recovery. Art, sculptures, jewels. A real pretty boy. They met at one of those themed bars when we were on leave from the 13th. Venusian beach regalia. F didn't know about Trigg and me, that we were with the Sons and all. But I got a hold of him after we rescued you from Luna when I was out on a supply run. Used a web cafe. About a week after I told him Trigg was gone, he sent a message saying he was going off-grid, joining the Suns on Luna. Haven't heard from him since. I'm sure he's all right, I say. Thanks. But we both know Luna's a cluster of shit right now. She shrugs. After a moment of picking the weightlifting calluses on her palms, she nudges me. I want you to know you're doing good. I know you didn't ask, and I'm just a grunt, but you are. Trigg would approve. Yeah, and he'd piss his pants if he knew we were marching on. She's cut short as the hollow above us beeps softly, and one of the comm blues calls up to me. I scramble to pick up my data pad. A single message is being broadcast across all frequencies into the belt. Our first contact with Mars since we went through the asteroid belt the first time. Play it, Holiday says. I do, and a recording appears. It's a grey interrogation room. A man's covered in blood, shackled to a chair. The jackal walks into frame to stand behind him. Is that... Holiday whispers beside me. Yes, I say. The man is Uncle Nero. The jackal holds a pistol in his hand. Darrow, my bone riders found this one sabotaging beacons in deep space. Really is tougher than he looks. Thought he might know your mind, but he tried to bite off his own tongue instead of talking to me. Irony for you. He walks behind my uncle. I don't want a ransom. I don't want anything from you. I just want you to watch. He lifts up the pistol. It's a slender grey slip of metal the size of my hand. The blues in the pit gasp. Severo rushes onto the bridge just as the jackal points the gun at the back of my uncle's head. My uncle lifts his eyes to look into the camera. Sorry, Darrow, but I'll say hello to your father for... The jackal pulls the trigger, and I feel another part of me slip away into the darkness as my uncle slumps in his chair. Turn it off, I say numbly, the past flooding into me. Nerol putting a frysuit helmet on my head as a boy, tussling with him at the laurel tide, his sad eyes as we sat beneath the gallows after Eo's hanging, his laugh... Timestamp puts it at 3 weeks ago, sir. Virga, the Comblue, says quietly. We didn't receive it because of the interference.
Did the rest of the fleet get this? I ask quietly.
I don't know, sir. Interference is marginal now, and it's on a pulse frequency. They've probably already seen it.
And I told Orion to keep all ships scanning in case we got lucky. It will leak.
Oh, shit.
Several mutters.
What?
Holliday asks.
We just set fire to our own fleet. I say mechanically. The fragile alliance between the high colors and low will shatter from this. My uncle was nearly as beloved as Ragnar. Nerol is gone. Just like that.
I feel helpless. I shudder inside. It's not real yet.
What do we do? Several asks.
Darrow.
Holliday, wake the howlers, I say.
Helmsman, max thrust to rear engines. I want to be with the main fleet in 4 hours. Get me Mustang and Orion on the comm. Telemannus is too.
Holliday snaps to attention.
Yes, sir.
Despite the interference, I reach Orion over the comm and tell her to seal off all the ship bridges and to isolate control of the guns in case anyone decides to take a pot shot at our gold allies. It takes nearly 30 minutes for the Blues to connect me with Mustang. Severo and Victor are with me now, along with Daxa. The rest of his family is on their ships. The signal is weak. Interference causing static that wavers across Mustang's face. She is moving through a hall. 2 golds with her.
Darrow, you've heard,
she says, seeing the others behind me.
30 minutes ago. I'm so sorry.
What's happening?
We received the communique. Some jackass tech pimped it to all the sensor chiefs,
Mustang confirms.
It's on the ship hubs throughout the fleet. Darrow, there's already movement against high colors on several of the ships. 3 golds on Persephone were killed 15 minutes ago by Reds, and one of my lieutenants opened up on 2 Obsidian who tried to take her. They're dead.
Shit's hitting the fan, Severo says.
I'm evacing all my personnel back to our ships.
There's gunshots in the background behind Mustang.
Where are you? I ask. On the Morning Star. What the hell are you doing there? You have to get off. I still have men on here. There's 7 golds in the engine deck for logistical support. I'm not leaving them behind.
Then I'm sending my father's guard. Daxo growls from his family's torch ships.
They'll get you out. That's stupid, Severo says. No, Mustang snaps. You send gold knights in here, and this turns into a bloodbath we don't recover from. Darrow, you have to get back here. That's the only thing that might stop this.
We're still hours out.
Well, do your best. There's one more thing. They've stormed the prison. I think they're going to execute Cassius.
Severo and I exchange a look.
You need to find Seffi and stay with her, I say. We'll be there soon. Find Seffi? Darrow, she's leading them.
Chapter 54. The Goblin and the Gold. My assault shuttle lands on the auxiliary deck of the Morning Star, where Mustang was supposed to meet us. She's not there. Neither are the gold she was rescuing. A coterie of sons of Ares waits for us instead, led by Theodora. She carries no weapon, and looks out of place surrounded by the armored men, but they defer to her. She tells me what's happened. My uncle's death sparked several small fights that escalated into shootings on both sides. Now several ships roil with conflict. Mustang has been taken by Seffi's men, along with Cassius and the rest of the high-color prisoners, Darrow. Theodora announces, assessing the rest of my lieutenants.
Gory damn savages,
Victor mutters.
If they kill her, this is done.
They won't kill her, I say.
Seffi knows Mustang's on her side.
Why would she do this?
Holiday asks. Justice, Victor says, drawing a look from Severa. No, I say. No, I think it's something else altogether.
Gory damn marvellous.
Victor nods back to space. Looks like the Telemanises are intent on slagging this all up. Another shuttle taxis into the hangar behind us. We gather as it lands. Storming down the ramp before it even gets down, jumping to the deck, is the whole Telemanis clan. Daxo, Kavax, Thraxa, two other sisters I haven't met, land heavily behind them. Armed to the teeth, though Kavax's arm is still in a sling. Behind them come 30 more of their house golds. It's a bloody damn army.
They're going to get us all killed, Holiday says.
At my side, Severo blinks up at the disembarking war party.
Death begets death begets death,
he murmurs. Kavax, what the hell are you doing? I ask as his family crosses the hangar.
Virginia needs our help,
he booms, not breaking his pace until I cut him off, blocking his way deeper into the ship. For a moment, I think he'll go through me.
We will not leave her to the mercy of savages.
I told you to stay on your ship. Unfortunately, we take orders from Virginia, not you, Daxo says. We know the ramifications of being here, but we will do what we must to protect our family. Mustang even told you not to storm here with knights.
The situation has changed,
Kavax rumbles. You want this to turn into a war. You want our fleet to shatter. The fastest way you do that is marching in here with a show of gold force.
We will not let her die,
Kavax says. And what if they kill her because of you? I ask. That's the only thing that gives him pause. What if they cut her throat when you storm in there? I step close so he can see the fear on my face too, and I can speak just loud enough for Daxo to hear as well. Listen to me, Kavax. The problem with that is that you leave the Obsidian only one choice. Fight back. And you know they can. Let me handle this, and we'll get her back. Don't, and we'll be standing over her casket tomorrow. Kavax looks back to his lean son, always the moderating influence, to see what he thinks. And to my relief, Daxo nods.
Very well, Kavax says. But I will go with you, Reaper. Children, await my summons. If I fall, come with all fury.
Yes, father, they say. Breathing a sigh of relief, I turn back to my men. Where's Severo? Severo snuck away while we argued, to what purpose I don't know. We rush after him through the corridors, Victor behind us. Holiday leads, taking information from other sons of Ares in through the optic implant in her eye. Her men have spotted the mob in the main hangar. They're holding a trial for Cassius for the murder of several dozen sons of Ares and, of course, Ares himself. No sign of Mustang. Where is she? She was supposed to stay out of sight. Meet us if she could. Did they catch her? Worse. When we reach the corridor that leads to the hangar, there's such a press of people that we can barely get through, shoving reds and obsidians out of the way as I pass. They're all shouting and pushing. Over their heads, near the center of the hangar, I see several dozen obsidian and reds astride the 20-meter-high walkway that spans part of the hangar, high over the crowd. Seffi's at their center. Seven golds hang dead from the walkway. Suspended by rubber cable ligature, feet dangling 5 meters above the crowd, scalps hewn off. Oriate's spines are tougher than average humans. Each of these men and women would have died horribly over several minutes from cerebral anorexia, watching the crowd beneath them curse and spit at them, and hurl lug nuts and wrenches and bottles. Blood clots in a long ribbon cover their chins to their chest. Tongues removed by Sephi the Quiet. Cassius and several other prisoners await their own executions upon the walkway, kneeling beside their captors, bloody and beaten. Mustang is not with them, thank Jove. They've stripped Cassius to the waist and carved a bloody sling blade across his broad chest.
Sephi!
I shout, but I can't be heard. Can't see Severo anywhere. There's more than 25,000 in a space meant for 10. Many are armed, some wounded from the battle the week prior, all pressing into the hangar to watch the execution. The obsidian stands titanic amidst the masses, like great boulders amidst a sea of low colours. I never should have condensed most of the wounded and rescued crews into this hotbed of grief. The crowd has realized I'm here now, and they part from me and begin to chant my name as if they think I've come to see justice done. The barbarity of it chills me. One of the men holding Cassius down is a green tech who gave me coffee on Phobos. Most of the others I don't recognize. One by one, those sons nearby recognize my presence. The quiet spreads around me.
Sephi!
I snarl.
Sephi!
At last she hears me.
What are you doing?
What you will not, she calls down in her own language, not in wrath, but acceptance that she performs an unsavory but necessary deed. Like a spirit of vengeance has drifted up from hell. Her white hair hangs long behind her. A knife is bloody from the tongues it has claimed. And to think, I vouched for her. Let her name this ship. But just because a lion lets you pet it doesn't mean it's tame. Kavax is horrified by the scene. He's almost ready to call his children, and would if Victra did not grip his arm and talk him down. There's fear in her eyes, too. Not just at the sight above, but at what could happen to her here. I shouldn't have brought the golds with me. There's moments in life when you're walking ahead so intent on your task that you forget to look down until you feel knee-deep in quicksand. I'm right there, now, surrounded by an unpredictable mob, looking up at a woman with the blood of Alia Snowsparrow running through her veins. My only defense, a small circle of Sons of Ares and golds. Holiday's pulling a scorcher. Victra's razor moves beneath her sleeve. I was too brash in storming in here. All this could go so wrong so quickly.
Where is Mustang? I call up to Sephi. Did you kill her?
Kill her? No. The daughter of the lion brought us from the ice. But she stood in the way of justice, so she is in chains. Then she's safe.
That's what this is, I call up. Justice? Is that what was given to Ragnar's friends, who your mother hanged from the chains of the spires?
This is the code of the ice.
You're not on the ice, Sephi. You're on my ship.
Is it yours?
This doesn't sit well with the low colors among the crowd.
We paid for it in our blood.
As did we all, I say. What about the ice was good? You left that place because you knew it was wrong. You knew your ways were shaped by your masters. You said you'd follow me. Are you a liar now?
Are you? You promised my people they would be safe.
Sephi bellows down to me, pointing her axe, the weight of loss heavy upon her.
I have seen the works of these people. I have seen the war they make, the ships they sail. Words will not suffice. These golds speak one language, and that is the language of blood. And so long as they live, so long as they speak, my people will not be safe. The power they have is too great.
Do you think this is what Ragnar wanted?
Yes.
Ragnar wanted you to be better than them. Than this. To be an example. But maybe the Golds are right. Maybe you are just killers. Savage dogs. Like they made you to be.
We will never be anything more until they are gone.
She says down to me, voice echoing around the hangar.
Why defend them?
She drags Cassius toward her.
Why weep over one who helped kill my brother?
Why do you think Ragnar gripped your hand instead of the sword when he died?
He didn't want you to make your life about vengeance. It's a hollow end. He wanted more for you. He wanted a future. I have seen the heavens. I have seen the hells. And I know now that our future is war,
Seffi says.
War until they fade in the night.
She drags Cassius toward her and lifts her knife to carve out his tongue. But before she does, a pulse fist fires and knocks the weapon from her hands. And Ares, lord of this rebellion, slams down on the walkway wearing his spiked helmet of war. The obsidians recoil from him as he straightens, dusts off his shoulders, and lets the helmet slither back into his armor.
What is he doing?
Victor asks me.
You dumb shit,
Severo sneers.
You're touching my property.
He stalks across the bridge towards Seffi.
Tst! Get away!
Several Valkyrie bar his way. He stands nose to chest with them.
Move, you albino sack of pubic hair!
The obsidian moves, only when Seffi tells her to. Sephiroth walks past the bound Golds, tapping their heads playfully as he goes.
That one's mine, he says, pointing at Cassius. Get your hands off him, lady.
She doesn't move her knife.
He cut my father's head off and put it in a box. And unless you want me to do the same to you, you'll do me the courtesy of letting go my property.
Seffi backs away, but does not sheathe her knife.
It is your blood debt. His life belongs to you. Obviously!
He shoos her away.
Stand up, you little pixie!
He barks at Cassius, kicking him with his boot and hauling him up by the cable around his neck.
Have some dignity! Stand up!
Cassius rises to his feet, awkwardly, hands behind his back, face swollen from the beatings. The sling blade livid on his chest.
Did you kill my father?
Severo flicks him on his broad chest.
Did you kill my father?
Cassius looks down at him. No measure of humor to the man, just pride. Not the vain sort I've seen in him over the years. War and life have drained that vigorous spirit from him. This is the face, the bearing of a man who wants nothing more than to die with a little dignity.
Yes,
he says loudly.
I did. Glad we cleared that up. He's a murderer,
Severo shouts to the crowd.
And what do we do to murderers?
The crowd roars for Cassius's life. And Severo, after making a show of cupping his ear, gives it to them. He shoves Cassius off the edge of the walkway. The Gold plummets till the cable around his neck snaps taut, arresting his fall. He gags, feet kick, face reddens. The crowd roars hungrily, chanting Ares's name. Mobs are soulless things that feed on fear and momentum and prejudice. They do not know the spirit in Cassius, the nobility of a man who would have given his life for his family, but was cursed to live while they all died. They see a monster, a 7-foot-tall former god, now mostly naked, humbled, strangling on his own hubris. I see a man trying his best in a world that doesn't give a shit. It breaks my heart. Yet I do not move, because I know I'm not witnessing the death of a friend, so much as I'm witnessing the rebirth of another. My company does not understand. Horror stains Kavix's face, Victor's too. Even though she held little pity for Cassius all this time, I think she mourns the savagery she sees in Severo. It's an ugly thing for any man to bear. Holliday pulls her weapon, eyeing the Reds nearby who point to Kavix, but they're missing the show. I watch in awe of Severo as he bounds up onto the railing, arms wide, embracing his army. Beneath, Cassius dangles and dies, and the crowd beneath makes a game of seeing who can launch themselves high enough to pull his feet. None succeed. "My name is Severo Aubaka," my friend cries out. "I am Ares." He thumps his chest. "I have killed 44 golds, 15 obsidian, 113 greys with my razor." The crowd roars in approval, even the obsidians. "Jove knows who else with ships, railguns and pulse fists. With nukes, knives, sharp sticks." He trails off dramatically. They slam their feet. He beats his chest again. "I am Ares. I am a murderer too." He puts his hands on his hips. "And what do we do to murderers?" This time no one answers. He never expected them to. He grabs the cable from the neck of one of the kneeling golds, wraps it around his own neck, and looking to Sephi with a demented little smile, winks and backflips off the railing. The crowd screams, but Victor's stunned gasp is the loudest. Severo's rope snaps taut. He kicks, choking beside Cassius. Feet scrambling, silent and horrible, face turning red on its way to purple like Cassius's. They swing together, the goblin and the gold, suspended above the swirling crowd that's now stampeding, trying to get up the ladder to the walkway to cut Severo down. But in their madness, they overload the ladder and it bends away from the wall. Victra's about to launch herself into the air on her grav boots to save him. I hold her down. "Wait. He's dying," she says frantically. "That's the point." It is not a boy who dangles on that line. It is not a broken-hearted orphan who needs me to pick him up. It's a man who has been through hell and now believes in the dream of his father, in the dream of my wife. It's a man I would die to protect, even as he dies to save the soul of this rebellion. Kavix is transfixed, watching Sephi, who stares down at the curious scene. Her obsidian are just as confused. They glance to her, searching for leadership. Ragnar believed in his sister, in her capacity to be better than the world that was given them. One in which there is no such thing as mercy, no such thing as forgiveness. Silently, she hefts her axe and swings it into Severo's cable, and then, reluctantly, Cassius's. Somewhere, Ragnar is smiling. Both men tumble through the air to be caught by the swirling crowd beneath. Kavix has not moved since Severo jumped, watching Sephi with a profound look of confusion, still with his hand on the comm to call his children, but I lose him in the crowd. The Sons of Ares and Howlers have formed a tight circle around their leader, shoving others back. Severo hacks for breath on all fours.
I rush to him and kneel as Holliday helps Cassius, who wheezes on the ground to my left. Pebble drapes her howler cloak over his body.
"Can you talk?" I ask Severo.
He nods, lips trembling from the pain, but his eyes are all fire. I give my arm and help him stand. I hold up a fist, demanding silence. Sons shout the others down till 25,000 breaths balance on the beating heart of my little friend. He looks out at them, startled by the love he sees, the reverence, the wet eyes.
"Darrow's wife,"
Severo croaks, larynx damaged.
"His wife,"
he says more deeply,
"and my father never met. But they shared a dream. One of a free world. Not built on corpses, but on hope. On the love that binds us. Not the hate that divides us. We have lost many. But we are not broken. We are not defeated. We fight on. But we do not fight for revenge for those who have died. We fight for each other. We fight for those who live. We fight for those who don't yet live. Cassius Albalona killed my father."
He stands over the man, swallowing before looking back up.
"But I forgive him. Why? Because he was protecting the world he knew. Because he was afraid."
Victra pushes her way to the front of the circle, watching Severo, who speaks now as if it was meant for her, and her alone. "We are the new age, the new world. And if we're to show the way, then we better damn well make it a better one. I am Severo Aubarka, and I am no longer afraid." Chapter 55. The Ignoble House Barker.
"You're bloody damn manic,"
I tell Severo when we're alone in Virenese infirmary. Severo's holding his neck, laughing at himself. I kiss the top of his head.
"Bloody damn insane, you know that?"
"Yeah, well, I stole that one from your playbook. What does that say about you?"
"That he's insane as well,"
Mickey says from the corner. He's smoking his laced burners, purple smoke slithering from nostrils. Severo winces.
"That slagging hurt. I can't even look sideways."
"You sprained your neck, damaged the cartilage, lacerations in your larynx,"
Dr. Virini says from behind her biometric scanner. She's a lithe, tan woman with that special small silence inside her, reserved for people who have seen both sides of hardship.
"Just as I said when you came in. All these tools you use, Virini. Really, where's the art in it?"
Virini rolls her eyes.
"Another 10 kilos on your body, and you would have broken your neck, Severo. Count yourself lucky."
"Good thing I took a shit before,"
he grumbles.
"Darrow's neck would have held up under the strain of 50 more kilos.
Mickey brags idly.
"The tensile raising of his cervical..."
"Really?"
Virini says tiredly.
"Can't you brag later, Mickey?"
"Merely observing my own mastery,"
Mickey replies, giving me a little wink.
He enjoys pushing the gentle Virini's buttons. Since he's employed her help in his project, they've been spending most waking moments in his laboratory, much to Virini's chagrin.
"Ow!"
Severo yelps as she prods the back of his spine.
"That's my body!"
"Sorry,
Pixie," I say.
"I almost broke my neck,"
Severo complains.
"Been there, done that. At least you didn't have to get whipped."
"I'd rather have been whipped," he mutters, wincing as he tries to turn his neck.
"Be better than this."
"Not being whipped by Pax," I reply.
I saw the video. He wasn't swinging that hard.
Have you ever been whipped? Did you see my back?
You seen my bloody damn eye at the Institute? Jackal had it plucked out with a knife.
Didn't see me whining.
I had my whole bloody damn body carved open,
I say, as the doors hiss open and Mustang enters.
Twice! Oh, it always comes back to the slagging carving,
Several mutters, wiggling his fingers in the air.
I'm so bloody damn special. I had my bones peeled, my DNA spliced.
Do they always do this? Viranir asks Mustang.
Seems like, Mustang says. Any chance I could bribe you to suture their mouths shut till they learn not to swear so much?
Mickey perks up.
Well, it's interesting you ask.
Severo interrupts him.
How's the gold holding up?
He asks Mustang.
You know.
Happy he still has a tongue, Mustang says.
They're suturing his chest in the infirmary. He has some internal bleeding from blunt trauma, but he'll live.
You finally went to see him? I ask.
I did.
She nods thoughtfully to herself.
He was emotional.
He wanted me to thank you, Severo. He says he knows he didn't deserve it.
Damn right he didn't, Severo mutters.
Seffi says the obsidian will leave him be, I say.
The obsidian?
Mustang asks, my statement pulling her from her thoughts.
All of them?
I laugh suddenly. I didn't even think about that.
What's that?
Severo asks.
She spoke for the obsidian now, not just the Valkyrie. Wasn't a slip of the tongue. Pan-tribalism wasn't in place before the riot, I say.
Must have used it to unite the other war chiefs under her direction. So, she pulled a coup?
Severo asks.
I laugh. Seems like.
We'll see if it holds. Still, impressive,
Mustang says.
They always told us never to let a good crisis go to waste.
Mickey shivers.
Obsidians playing politics.
So, all that out there, was that strategy, or was that real?
Mustang asks Severo.
Dunno, Severo shrugs. I mean, gotta stop the cycle somewhere.
Sucks, but Dad's gone. No sense burning down the world to try and bring him back, you know?
Cassius didn't kill Dad because he hated him. They were both soldiers doing what soldiers do.
Mustang shakes her head, at a loss for words. So she sets a hand on his shoulder, and he knows how impressed she is. The compliment of silence is as deep a one as she can give, and Severo favors her with a rare, unironic smile.
One that disappears when the door opens and Victra comes in.
She's red-eyed and agitated.
I need to talk to you, she says to Severo.
Get out, Severo says when we don't move. Everyone!
We wait outside the door as Victra and Severo speak inside.
How long do you think it will take to make the journey?
Mustang asks. 49 days, I say, pulling Mickey back from the door where he cups his ear in an attempt to hear the happenings inside.
Kia's keeping the blues quiet.
49 days is a long time for my brother to make plans.
Beyond our hull, the worlds continue to turn. Reds are hunted. And though we've woken the spirit of the low colors and given this rebellion another victory, every day we spend crossing the distance to the core is another day that the Jackal can hunt our friends and the Sovereign can squelch the rebellions that plague her. My uncle's already gone. How many more will die before I return?
This won't heal everything, Mustang says. The Obsidian still killed 7 prisoners. My people are wary of this war. The consequences, particularly if Sefi now has united the tribes, that makes her dangerous.
And more useful, I say.
Until she disagrees with you again. This could go wrong at any moment.
She straightens as Mickey skitters back and the door to the infirmary opens. Severo and Victra come out, both wearing smiles.
"What are you two grinning about?" I ask.
"Just this."
Severo thrusts out a House Jupiter Institute ring. It's loose on his finger. I squint at it, not understanding right away. His own ring is missing, and then I see it awkwardly jammed onto Victor's pinky.
"She proposed," he says with delight.
"What?"
I sputter. Mustang's eyebrows shoot up.
"Proposed? As in..." "Yeah, boyo," Severo beams. "We are getting hitched."
Severo and Victra marry 7 nights later in a small ceremony in the auxiliary hangar of the Morning Star. When Victra asked me to give her away after they broke the news to us, I couldn't speak. I hugged her then as I hug her now, before taking her arm and walking her through the small line of scrubbed and washed howlers and towering Telemannuses. It's the cleanest I've ever seen Severo, his unruly mohawk combed to the side as he stands before Mickey. It is custom to have a white give the benediction, but Victra laughed at the idea of tradition and asked Mickey. The violet's face glows now. Too much makeup on the day, but he's a ray of light all the same. From carver to slaver to slave to wedding officiant, he's not had an easy road. But he's lovelier for it. He was delighted when Clown and Screwface asked him to join us for Severo's bachelor night, and he howled along with us as we kidnapped Severo from his room the night before and dragged him to the mess hall, where the howlers gathered to drink. The animosity stemming from the riot has not abated entirely, but the wedding brings a sense of nostalgic normalcy. Surrounded by the insanity of war, it's a special hope given, knowing life can go on. Though some sons gripe about the marriage of the red leader to a gold, Victor's done enough to merit respect from the leaders within the sons, and the bravery she showed in storming the Morning Star with Seffi and me around Ilium has bought her their respect. She shed blood for them, with them, so my fleet is quiet, at peace. At least for tonight. I've never seen Severo so happy, nor so nervous as he was the hour before the ceremony when he combed his hair in my washroom. Not that you can do much with a mohawk.
"Is this insane? It seemed like a good idea yesterday," he asked, staring at himself in the mirror.
"And it's a good idea today, too," I told him.
"You're not just saying that. Tell me the truth, man. I feel sick."
"Before I married Io, I threw up."
"Bullshit.
Got it all over my uncle's boots." A twinge of pain as I remember he's gone. "Wasn't that I was afraid of making the wrong decision. I was afraid she was. Afraid of not living up to our expectations. But my uncle told me that it's women who see us better than we see ourselves. That's why you love Victra. That's why you fight with her. And that's why you deserve this." Severo squinted at me in the mirror.
"Yeah, but your uncle was crazy. Everyone knows that."
"Even company, then. We're all a little manic. Especially Victra. I mean, she'd have to be to marry you." He grinned.
"Bloody damn right."
And I rumpled his hair, hoping beyond all hope that they can have this little moment of happiness, and maybe more after that. It's the best any of us can hope for, really.
"Wish Pops was here, though.
I think he's laughing his ass off somewhere, that you have to stand on your tiptoes to kiss your bride," I said.
"Always was a prick."
Now Severo shifts from foot to foot as I hand Victra over to him, and he looks up into our eyes. I'm not even there. None of us are, not to them. The gentleness I see from the raging woman now is all it takes to know how much she loves him. It's not something she'd ever talk about. It's not her way. but the sharp edge she has for everything and everyone is dull tonight. Like she sees Sevro as a refuge, a place where she can be safe. I rejoin Mustang as Mickey begins his flowery speech. It's not half so grandiloquent as I might have expected. The way Mustang nods along to the words, I know she must have helped him edit it down. Reading my mind, she leans over. You should have heard the first draft. It was a spectacle. She sniffs me. Are you drunk? She looks back at the flushed howlers and teetering Telemannuses.
Are they all drunk?
Shh, I say, and hand her a flask.
You're too sober.
Mickey is finishing the ceremony.
A compact that can be broken only by death. I pronounce you Sevro and Victra Barker.
Julii, Sevro corrects quickly. Hers is the Elder House.
Victra shakes her head down at him.
He said it right.
But you're a Julii, he replies, confused.
Yesterday I was. Today I'd rather be a Barker.
Presuming you don't have a problem with that and I don't have to become proportionally diminutive.
It'd be lovely, Sevro says, cheeks glowing as Mickey continues and Sevro and Victra turn to face their friends.
Then I present you to your fellows and the worlds as Sevro and Victra of the Martian House, Barker.
The ceremony may have been small, but the celebration is anything but. Fleet-spanning, even. If my people know one thing, it is how to survive hardship with celebration. Life's not just a matter of breathing, it's a matter of being. Word of Sevro's speech and his hanging spread through the ships, stitching the wounds back together. But this day is the one that matters, the one that reaffirms the joy of life throughout my fleet. Dances are held on the smallest corvettes, on the destroyers and torch ships, and the Morning Star. Flights of rip wings buzz bridges in celebratory formation. Swill and society liquors flow among the milling crowds, which gather in hangars to sing and dance around weapons of war. Even Kavax, so stubborn in his fear of chaos and his prejudice against the Obsidians, dances with Mustang, drunkenly hugging Sevro and Victra and clumsily attempting to forget the ballroom dreck of gold dancers and learn those of my people from a full-figured red with a laughing face and a mechanic's grease under her nails. With them is Scyther, the awkward orange who so impressed me a year and a half ago in the garages of the Pax. He only just finished Mustang's special project this morning. Now he's drunk and turning his ungainly body around on the dance floor as Kavax roars approval. Daxo shakes his head at his father's antics while sitting in reserve on the side, as always. I share a drink with him.
It's wine, I say.
Thank Jove,
he replies, delicately taking the glass. Your people keep trying to give me some kind of engine solvent. He scans his datapad warily.
I've got a holiday on security, I say. This isn't a gold party.
He laughs. Thank Jove for that, then, as well. Finally, he takes a sip from his wine.
Venusian atolls, he says. Very nice.
Broke had good taste. Your father is a sight, I say, nodding to the dance floor where the big man sways along with two reds.
He's not the only one, Daxo replied shrewdly, following my eyes to Mustang, who's now being spun about by Sevro.
The woman's face is aglow with life, or maybe it's the alcohol. Hair sweaty and plastered on her forehead.
She loves you, you know, Daxo says. She's just afraid of losing you, so she holds you far away.
He smiles to himself. Funny how we are, isn't it?
Daxo, why aren't you dancing?
Victor says, striding up to him. So proper all the time. Up, up! She hauls him up and pushes him onto the dance floor, then collapses into his chair.
My feet. Raided Antonia's closet. Forgot she's got pigeon feet.
I laugh, and Clown stumbles up to us, heavily drunk.
Victor, Darrow, a question. Do you think Pebble is interested in that man?
He asks me, leaning against one of the tables as he chugs down another glass of wine. His teeth are already purple.
The tall one? Victor asks.
Pebble's dancing with a grey captain.
She seems to fancy him.
He's terribly handsome, Clown says. Good teeth, too.
I suppose you could always cut in, I say.
Well, I wouldn't want to seem desperate.
Joe forbid, Victor says.
I think I'll cut in.
I think it's a good idea, she says. But you should bow first, to be polite.
Oh, then it's settled. I'll go right now.
He pours another glass of wine.
After another drink.
I take the wine from him and push him on his way. Holiday appears in the doorframe to watch Clown's awkward interruption. He's bowing to Pebble and sweeping back his hand dramatically.
Oh, hell! He actually did it!
Victor snorts champagne through her nose.
You should do the same with Mustang.
Think she's trying to steal my husband away.
Husband.
That's a weird word.
It's a weird world.
Isn't it, though? Wife. Who'd have thought?
I look her up and down. On you, it seems to fit. I put my arm around her. It seems to fit perfectly. She smiles radiantly.
Sir,
Holiday says, coming up to us.
Holiday, come to have a drink.
I glance over at her, smile dying when I see the expression that marks her face. Something has happened.
What is it?
She motions me away from Victor.
It's the jackal,
she says quietly, so as not to spoil the mood.
He's on the comm for you. Direct link.
What's the delay? I ask.
6 seconds.
On the dance floor, Severo's spinning with Mustang clumsily, laughing because neither knows the dance the reds around them perform. Her hair is dark from sweat on her temples. Her eyes are light with the joy of the moment. None of them feel the sudden dread in me, in the world beyond. I don't want them to. Not tonight.
Chapter 56. In Time. He sits in a simple chair in the center of my circular training room, wearing a coat of white with a gold line to either side of his high collar. The stars above his glowing hologram are cold stains of light through the duraglass dome. This room was built to train for war, and so it is here that I will grant my enemy an audience. I will not let him pervert this ship where Roke lived and where my friends celebrate by seeing or being any place else. Even though he's millions of kilometers away, I can nearly smell the pencil-shaving scent of him, hear the vast silence with which he fills rooms as I stand before his digital image. It's so lifelike, if it did not glow, I would think him here. The background behind him is blurred. He watches me enter the room. No smile on his face, no false pleasantness, but I can tell he's amused. His silver stylus spins in his one hand, the only sign of his agitation. Hello, Reaper. How are the festivities? I try not to let my discomfort show. Of course he knows of the wedding. He has spies in our fleet. How close they are to me, I cannot tell. But I don't let the thought spread malignantly through me. If he could reach out and hurt us here, he already would have. What do you want? I ask. You called me last time. I thought I should return the favor, particularly considering the message I sent of your uncle. Did you receive it? I say nothing. After all, when you arrive at Mars, the cannons will speak for us. We may never see each other again. Strange, isn't that? Did you see Rogue before he died?
I did.
And did he weep for your forgiveness?
No.
The Jackal frowns. I thought he would. It's easy to fool a romantic. To think he was right there when I took his girl. You went running by in the hall, screaming Tactus's name, and he looked up in confusion. I pushed a sliver of Quinn's skull deeper into her brain with my scalpel. I thought about letting her live with brain damage, but the thought of her drooling everywhere made me sick. You think he still would have loved her if she drooled? There's a sound at the door, out of the camera's capture range. Mustangs followed me from the wedding. Taking in the scene, she watches quietly. I should turn off the hollow, leave this creature to himself, but I can't seem to part with him. The same curiosity that brought me here now anchors me to this spot. Roke wasn't perfect, but he cared about gold. He cared about humanity. He had something he would die for, and that makes him a better man than most, I say. It's easy to forgive the dead, the Jackal replies.
I'd know.
A tiny spasm of humanity moves across his lips. He may never say it, but the very tone of his voice tells me he is not without regret. I know he wanted his father's approval, but could it actually be that he misses the man? That he's forgiven his father in death and now mourns him? He pulls a short gold baton up from his lap. With the press of a button, the baton extends to a scepter, one with the skull of a jackal overtop the pyramid of the society. I had it commissioned for him more than a year ago. I've not parted with your gift, he says. He traces the head of the jackal. All my life, I've been given lions. Nothing of my own. What does it say about me? That my greatest enemy knows me better than any friend. You the scepter, I the sword, I say, ignoring his question. That was the plan. I gave it to him because I wanted him to feel loved, to feel like I was his friend. And I would have been, then. I would have helped him change like Mustang did, like Cassius might. Is it what you thought it would be? I ask. What? Your father's seat. He frowns, considering which tack to take. No, he says eventually. No, it is not what I expected. You want to be hated, don't you? I ask. That's why you killed my uncle when you didn't need to. It gives you purpose. That's why you called me, to feel important. But I don't hate you. Liar, I don't. I killed Pax and your uncle and Lorne. I pity you. He recoils. Pity? Arch-governor of all Mars, one of the most powerful men in all the worlds, with a might to do anything you like. And it's not enough. Nothing has ever been enough for you. Nor will it be. Adrius, you're not trying to prove yourself to your father, to me, to Virginia, to the Sovereign. You're trying to matter to yourself, because you're broken inside, because you hate what you are. You wish you were born like Claudius, like Virginia. You wish you were like me. Like you? He asks with a sneer. A filthy red. I'm no red. I show him my hands, bare of sigils. It disgusts him.
Not even evolved enough to have a colour, Darrow. Just a Homo sapiens playing in the realm of gods.
Gods? I shake my head. You're no god. You're not even a gold. You're just a man who thinks a title will make him great. Just a man who wants to be more than he actually is. But all you really want is love. Isn't that right? He snorts in derision. Love is for the weak. The only thing you and I have in common is our hunger. You think that I cannot be satisfied, that I always yearn for more. But look in the mirror, and you'll see the same man staring back at you. Tell your little red friends what you like, but I know you lost yourself among us. You yearned to be gold. I saw it in your eyes at the Institute. I saw that fever on Luna when I proposed that we should rule. I saw it when you rode that triumphal chariot up to the steps of the Citadel. It's that hunger that makes us forever alone. And there he strikes the core of me. That abyssal fear that the darkness made my reality. The fear of being alone. Of never finding love again. But then Mustang steps out to join me. You're wrong, brother, she says. The jackal leans back at the sight of his sister. Darrow had a wife, a family he loved. He had just a little bit and he was happy. You had everything, and you were miserable. And you always will be because you covet. His foundation of calm begins to crumble. That's why you killed Father and Quinn, why you killed Pax. But this isn't a game, brother. This isn't one of your mazes. Do not call me brother, whore. You are no sister of mine. Opening your legs for a mongrel, for a beast of burden. Are the obsidians next? I bet they are all queued up already. You are a disgrace to your colour and to our house. I move angrily toward his hollow, but Mustang puts a hand in the centre of my chest and turns back to our brother. You think you never had love, brother? But Mother loved you. If she loved me, why didn't she stay? He says sharply. Why did she leave? I don't know, Mustang says. But I loved you too, and you threw that away. You were my twin. We were bound for life. There are tears in her eyes. I defended you for years. Then I find out that it was you who had Claudius killed. She blinks through the tears, shaking her head as she finds her resolve. I cannot forgive that. I cannot. You had love and you lost it, brother. That is your curse. I step forward till I'm even with Mustang. Adrius, we are coming for you. We will break your ships. We will storm Mars. We will burrow through the walls of your bunker. We will find you and we will bring you to justice. And when you hang from the gallows, when the door beneath you opens, when your feet do the devil's dance, then you will realize in that moment that this has all been for nothing, because there will be no one left to pull your feet. The pale light of the hollow vanishes as we close the connection, leaving us to the glass ceiling and the stars beyond. Are you all right? I ask Mustang. She nods, wiping her eyes. Didn't expect to start crying like that. Sorry. To be fair, I think I cry more. But forgiven. She tries a smile. Do you actually think we can do this, Darrow? Her eyes are red. The mascara she wore for the wedding stained by the tears. Her running nose is a ruddy pink, but I've never seen beauty as deep as hers is now. All the rawness of life flows through her. All the cracks and fears that make her who she is worn in her eyes. So imperfect and rough that I want to hold her and love her as long as I can. And for once, she lets me. We have to. You and I have a whole life ahead of us, I say, pulling her into me. It seems impossible a woman like this could ever want to be held by me. But she puts her head in my chest as I wrap my arms around her, and I remember how perfectly we fit together as we hold each other and the stars and minutes pass distantly. We should return to the party, she eventually says to me. Why? I have everything I need right here. I look down at the crown of her golden head and see the darkness of her roots. I breathe in the full scent of her. If it ends tomorrow, or in 80 years, I could breathe her the rest of my life. But I want more. I need more. I tilt her slender jaw up with my hand, so that she's looking at me. I was going to say something important, something memorable, but I've forgotten it in her eyes. That gulf that divided us is still there, filled with questions and recrimination and guilt. But that's only part of love, part of being human. Everything is cracked. Everything is stained except the fragile moments that hang crystalline in time and make life worth living. Chapter 57 Luna. The Rubicon beacons are a sphere of transponders, each as large as 2 obsidian, floating in space 1 million kilometers beyond Earth's core, encircling the innermost domain of the Sovereign. For 500 years, no foreign fleet has passed beyond their borders. Now, 2 months and 3 weeks after news of the destruction of the invincible Sword Armada reaches the core, 8 weeks after I proclaimed that we sailed on Mars, 17 days after the Sovereign's declaration of martial law in all society cities, the Red Armada approaches Luna, sailing past the Rubicon beacons without firing a shot. Telemannus' torch ships race ahead at the vanguard to clear mines and scan for any traps left by society forces. They're followed by Orion's obsidian-filled heavy destroyers, painted with the all-seeing eyes of the ice spirits. Then by the Julii fleet, with Victra's weeping sun adorning the heavy dreadnought, the Pandora, the forces of the Reformers. The daughters-in-law of Lorne Au Arcos come for justice, and the gold and black ships bearing the line of Augustus, led by the battle-scarred Dejah Thoris. And finally, my own vessels, led by the greatest ship ever built and stolen, the indomitable white Morning Star, painted with a 7-kilometer-long red scythe on her port and starboard sides. The holes we carved in her with our claw drills are not mended all through the ship, but the armor has been replaced along the outer hull. The Pax died to give her to us, and what a prize she is. We ran out of paint on the bottom scythe, so it's a sloppy crescent moon, the symbol of House Loon. The men think it's a good omen, an accidental promise to Octavia Auloon that we have her marked. War has come to the core. For 3 days they've known I was coming. We could not cover our entire approach from their sensors, but the chaos around the planet shows how unprepared they are for it. It is a civilization in turmoil. The Ash Lord has arrayed the Scepter Armada, the pride of the core, around Luna in defensive formation. Caravans of trading vessels from the rim clutter the Via Appia above the northern lunar hemisphere, while backlogs of civilian vessels stagger their way back along the Via Flaminia, waiting to pass through inspection on the colossal Flaminius astrodock before their descent into Earth's atmosphere. But as we cross the Rubicon beacons and encroach farther into lunar space, the vessels hurl themselves into a frenzy, many bursting from their ordered queue to race for Venus, others trying to pass the docks entirely and burn for Earth. They flare as silver and white society fighters and fast-moving gun frigates shred engines and hulls. Dozens of vessels die to maintain order. We're outnumbered, still vastly outgunned, but initiative is on our side, and so is the fear that all civilizations have of barbarian invaders. The first dance of the Battle of Luna has begun. Attention, unidentified fleet. A brittle copper voice echoes through an open frequency. This is Lunar Defense Command. You are in possession of stolen property and in violation of societal deep space boundary regulations. Identify yourself and intentions with all haste. Fire a long-range missile at the Citadel, I say. That's 1,000,000 kilometers away, the Gunblue says. It'll be shot down.
He bloody well knows that,
Severo says.
Follow the order.
It took a campaign of counterintelligence not just in our transmissions to Sun's cells throughout the core, but among our ships and commanders, to bring us here unnoticed. The Jackal will not be in position to help the Sovereign, nor will the Classes Venetum, the Fourth Fleet of Venus, or the Classes Libertas, the Fifth Fleet of the Inner Belt, which the Sovereign sent to Mars to aid the Jackal. At full burn, all the ships will be 3 weeks away at current orbit. The lie worked. The spies in my ship leaked misinformation about our plans, just as I'd hoped. That is the peril of a solar empire. All the power in all the worlds means nothing if it is in the wrong place. 20 minutes later, my missile is shot down by orbital defense platforms. New direct link incoming, the Comblue says behind me. It's got Praetorian tags. Main hollow, I say. A gold Praetorian with an aquiline face and grey at the temples of his short cropped hair materializes in front of me. The image will appear on all bridges and holoscreens in the fleet. Darrow of Lycos, he asks in an impeccably well-bred lunar accent. Are you in possession of Imperium over this warfleet? What need have I of your traditions? I ask. Very well, the gold says, maintaining propriety even now. I am Arch-Legate Lucius Al-Sejanus of the Praetorian Guard, first cohort. I know of Sejanus. He's an eerie, efficient man. I am come with a diplomatic envoy to your coordinates, he says dryly. I request you stay further aggression and give my shuttle access to your flagship so we might relate the Sovereign and Senate's intentions in... Denied, I say. I beg your pardon? If any society ship comes toward my fleet, they will be fired upon. If the Sovereign wishes to speak with me, then let her do it herself, not through a lackey's mouth. Tell the hag we're here for war, not words. My ship throbs with activity. Told only 3 days ago of our true destination, the men are filled with madcap excitement. There's something immortal to attacking Luna. Win or lose, we've forever stained the legacy of gold. And in the minds of my men, and in the chatter we pick up over the comms from the core planets and moons, there is real fear in the air. For the first time in centuries, gold has shown weakness. Breaking the Sword Armada has spread the rebellion faster than my speeches ever could. Soldiers salute as they pass me in the hall, making their way to their troop carriers and leechcraft. The squads are predominantly red and defected greys, but I see green battle techs, red machinists, and obsidian scouts and heavy infantry in each capsule as well. I resend the shuttle flight clearance order to the Morningstar's flight controller with my authorization code. It's accepted and cleared. Most days I'd trust the order to stand on its own, but today I want to be sure, so I make my way to the bridge to confirm in person. The Red Marine captain responsible for the security of the bridge shouts his men to attention when I enter. More than 50 armored soldiers salute me. The blues in their pits continue in their operations. Orion's at the forward observation post where Roke once stood. Meaty hands clasped behind her back, skin nearly as dark as her black uniform. She turns to me with those large, pale eyes, and that nasty white smile. Reaper, the fleet is nearly ready. I greet her warmly, and join her in looking out through the glass viewports. How does it look? The Ash Lord is pulled up in defensive array. He seems to think we intend an iron rain before moving him off the moon. Sharp assumption, he has no reason to come to us. All the rest of the ships in the Corps will be headed here. When they get here, we'll be the cockroach pinned between the ground and the hammer. He's assumed correctly we'll rush the engagement. The Ash Lord knows war, I say. That he does. She glances at her datapad. What's this I hear about a flight clearance for a Sarpedon-class shuttle from HB Delta? I knew she'd notice, and I don't want to explain myself to her now. Not everyone is as compassionate toward Cassius as I, even with Severo sparing his life. I'm sending an emissary to meet with a group of senators. I lie. We both know you're not, she says. What's going on? I step closer so no one can overhear us. If Cassius remains in the fleet while we go to war, someone will try to get past the guards and slit his throat. There's too much hate for the Bologna for him to stay here. Then hide him in another cell. Don't release him, she says. He'll just go back to them, rejoin the war. He won't. She looks behind me to ensure we're not being overheard. If the Obsidians find out, this is exactly why I didn't tell anyone, I say. I'm releasing him. You clear that shuttle. You let it go. I need you to promise me. Her lips make a thin, hard line. Promise me. She nods and looks back to Luna. As always, I feel she knows more than she lets on. I promise. But you be careful, boy. You still owe me a parrot, remember? I meet Severo in the hall outside the high-security prisoner lockup. He's sitting atop the orange cargo crate and its floating grav rig, drinking from a flask, left hand rested on the scorcher in his leg holster. The hall's quieter than it should be, given its guests, but it's in the main hangars and gun stations and engines and armories where my ship pulses with activity. Not here, on the prison deck. What took you? Severo asks. He's in his black fatigues, too, stretching uncomfortably against his new combat vest. His boots click together as his legs dangle. Orion was asking questions on the bridge about the flight clearance. Shit. She figure out we were letting the Eagle fly? She promised to let it go. She better. And she better keep her trap shut. If Seffi finds out. I know, I say. And so does Orion. She won't tell her. If you say so. Severo wrinkles his face and downs the last of his flask as he glances down the hall. Mustang approaches. Guards are redeployed, she says. Marine patrols are diverted from Hall 13C. Cassius is clear to the hangar. Good. You sure about this? I ask, touching her hand. She nods. Not entirely, but that's life. Severo, you're still prime. Severo hops down from the crate.
Obviously. I'm here, ain't I?
Severo helps me maneuver the grav rig through the brig's doors. The guard station is deserted. Food wrappers and tobacco dip cups, all that remain of the Sun's team who guarded the prisoners. Severo follows me from the entrance down into the decagon room of duroglass cells, whistling the tune he made for Pliny. "If your leg's a little wet," he sings as we stop before Cassius's cell. Antonia's cell is across from his. Her face swollen from her beating, she watches us hatefully without moving from her cell's cot. Severo knocks on the duroglass separating us from Cassius.
"Wakey, wakey, Sir Bologna!"
Cassius wipes his eyes of sleep and sits up from his bed, taking in Severo and I, but addressing Mustang.
"What's going on?"
"We've arrived at Luna," I say.
"Not Mars?"
Cassius asks in surprise. Antonia shifts in her cot behind us, just as startled by the news as Cassius appears to be. "Not Mars."
"You're actually attacking Luna,"
Cassius murmurs.
"You're insane. You don't have the ships. How do you even plan to get past the shields?"
"Don't you worry about that, sweetheart," Severo says. "We got our ways. But soon hot metal's gonna be sliding through this ship, and someone's likely gonna come in here and pop you in the head. Darrow here gets all sad thinking of that, and I don't like sad Darrow."
Cassius just stares at us like we're mad.
He still doesn't get it.
"When you said you were done with this war, did you mean it?" I ask.
"I don't understand."
"It's pretty bloody damn simple, Cassius," Mustang says. "Yes or no?"
"Yes," Cassius says from his cot. Antonius sits up to watch.
"I am. How could I not be? It's taken everything from me. All for people who only care about themselves."
"Well?" I ask Severo.
"Oh, please," Severo snorts. "You think that's gonna satisfy me?"
"What game are you playing at?" Cassius asks.
"Ain't no game, boyo. Darrow wants me to let you out."
Cassius's eyes widen.
"But I need to know you aren't gonna come try to kill us. You're all about honor and blood debts, so I need you to swear an oath so I can sleep soundly."
"I killed your father. You really should stop reminding me of that."
"If you stay here, we can't protect you," I say. "I believe the worlds still need Cassius Albalona. But there's no place for you here, and there's no place for you with the Sovereign.
If you give me your oath, on your honor, that you will leave this war behind you, I'll give you your freedom."
Antonia bursts out laughing behind us.
"This is hilarious. They're toying with you, Cassie, just plucking you like a harp."
"Be quiet, you poisonous little brat," Mustang snaps.
Cassius eyes Mustang, judging our proposal.
"You agree to this?"
"It was my idea," she says.
"None of this is your fault, Cassius. I was cruel to you, and I'm sorry for that. I know you wanted revenge on Darrow, on me."
"Not on you. Not ever on you."
Mustang flinches. "But I know you've seen what revenge brings. I know you've seen what Octavia really is. What my brother really is. You're only guilty of trying to protect your family. You don't deserve to die here."
"You really want me to go?" he asks.
"I want you to live," she says. "And yes, I want you to go. And never come back."
"But go where?" he asks.
anywhere but here.
Cassius swallows, searching himself. Not just seeking to understand what he owes honor or duty, but trying to imagine a world without her. I know the horrible loneliness he feels now, even as we give him freedom. Life without love is the worst prison of all. But he licks his lips and nods to Mustang, not to me.
On my father, on Julian, I promise not to raise arms against any of you. If you let me go, I will leave. And I will never come back.
You coward!
Antonia punches the glass of her cell.
You gory damn snivelling little whipped worm!
I nudge Severo. Still your call.
He tugs the hairs of his little goatee.
Ah, hell. You better be right about this, you pricklicks.
Digging into his pocket, he pulls out the magnetic keycard, and Cassius's cell door unlocks with a heavy thunk.
Then there's a shuttle waiting for you in the auxiliary hangar on this level, Mustang says evenly. It's been cleared to fly, but you have to go now.
That means now, shithead,
Severo says.
They'll pop you in the back of the head,
Antonia is saying.
You traitor!
Cassius puts a tentative hand on the cell door, as if he's afraid he'll push and find it locked and we'll laugh at him, and all the hope we've given him will be ripped away. But he has faith, and, stealing his face, he pushes. The cell's door swings outward. Cassius walks out to join us. He holds out his hands to be cuffed.
You're a free man,
Severo slurs, wrapping the orange box heavily with his knuckles. But you gotta get in the box so we can wheel you out of here without anyone seeing.
Of course.
He pauses and turns back to me to extend a hand.
I take it, a strange feeling of kinship rising in me.
Goodbye, Darrow.
Good luck, Cassius.
And for Mustang, he pauses, wanting to reach out and wrap his arms around her, but she merely sticks out a hand, cold even now to him.
He looks at her hand and shakes his head, not accepting her gesture.
We'll always have Luna, he says. Goodbye, Cassius.
Goodbye.
He goes to the crate, which Severo has opened, and looks inside. Hesitating there, wanting to say something to Severo, perhaps thank him one last time.
I don't know if your father was right, but he was brave.
He extends a hand to Severo, as he did me.
I'm sorry that he's not here.
Severo blinks hard at the hand, wanting to hate it. This does not come easy for him. He's never been a gentle soul, but he does his best and he takes the outstretched hand. They shake, but something feels wrong. Cassius won't let go. His face is cold, eyes unforgiving. His body rotates, so fast I can't stop him from jerking back on Severo's hand, pulling my friend's smaller body forward toward him, just as he swivels his hip, bringing Severo to his right armpit like they're dancing, so he can strip Severo's pistol from his leg holster. Severo stumbles, fumbling for the weapon, but it is already gone. Cassius shoves him off and stands behind him with the scorcher pressed to his spine. Severo's eyes are huge, staring at me in fear.
Darrow!
Cassius, no! I shout.
This is my duty! Cassius!
Mustang takes a step forward, outstretched hand trembling.
He saved your life. Please.
On your knees, Cassius says to us. On your gory damn knees. I feel myself teetering on the edge of a precipice, the darkness spreading out before me, whispering to have me back. I can't reach for my razor. Cassius could easily shoot me down before I even pull it.
Mustang goes to her knees and motions me to get down. Numbly, I follow her lead.
Kill him!
Antonia's shouting.
Shoot the bastard!
Cassius, listen to me. I beg.
I said on your knees.
Cassius repeats to Severo.
My knees?
Severo smiles wickedly. A mad gleam in his eye.
Stupid gold.
You forgot howler rule number one. Never bow. He snatches up his razor from his right wrist, tries to spin around, but he's too slow. Cassius shoots him in the shoulder, jerking him sideways. The combat vest cracks. Blood sprays onto the metal wall. Severo stumbles forward, eyes wild.
For gold,
Cassius whispers, and fires six more shots point blank into Severo's chest. Chapter 58. Fading Light. Blood erupts from Severo's chest, spraying my face. He stumbles, drops his razor, collapses to his knees, gasping in shock. I rush to him under the muzzle of Cassius's smoking weapon. Severo's grasping at his chest, confused. Blood dribbles from his mouth, bubbling out through his vest, staining my hands. He coughs it onto me. He's desperate to rise, to laugh it off. But nothing's working. His arms tremble, his breath ragged, eyes huge, fear wild and deep and primal in him as Antonia cackles in delight from her cell.
Don't die, I say frantically. Don't die, Severo.
He shivers in my arms.
Severo, please, please, stay alive, please, Severo.
Without a final word, without a plea or a flicker of personality, he goes still, leaking red. Pulse fading away as tears stream down my face, and Antonia howls in mockery. I cry out in horror, at the bleak evil I feel in the world, rocking there on the floor with my best friend. Overwhelmed by this darkness and the hate and the helplessness. Cassius stares pitilessly down at me.
Reap what you sow, he says.
I rise with a horrible sob. He strikes me on the side of the head with the scorcher. I don't go down. I take the blow and pull my razor, but he hits me twice more and I fall. He takes my razor from me, holding it to Mustang's throat as she tries to rise. He points the gun at my forehead as I look up at him and is about to pull the trigger.
The Sovereign will want him alive,
Mustang says.
Yes, Cassius replies quietly, overcoming his anger. Yes, you're right. So she can peel him apart till you tell us your battle plans.
Cassius, get me out of this damned cell,
Antonia hisses. Cassius moves Severo's body over with his foot and pulls out the pass car to open her door. When Antonia exits her cell, she does so like a queen. Prisoner slippers making little tracks in Severo's fresh blood. She knees Mustang in the face. Mustang goes down. My own vision wavers in and out. Nausea in my gut from a concussion. Warmth from Severo's blood leaking through my shirt along the belly. Antonia sighs above me.
Ugh, the goblins still leaking everywhere.
Guard them, and get their data pads, Cassius orders. We need a map.
Where are you going?
Getting manacles. He tosses her the scorcher. As he disappears around the corner, Antonia crouches over me, considering. She pushes the gun against my lips.
Open?
She punches my testicles.
Open?
Eyes rolling in pain, I open my mouth. She shoves the scorcher barrel inside. The alien metal presses against the back of my throat. Teeth scrape along the black steel. I gag, feel
bile coming up. She stares me hatefully in the eyes, crouched over my head, the barrel down my throat as my body convulses, only pulling it out as I vomit on the ground. Worm. She spits on me, and takes our data pads and razors, tossing Severo's to Cassius when he returns from the guard station. They fit me in a prisoner harness, a metallic muzzle and vest combination that interlocks the arms and pins them to my chest so that my fingers are touching the opposite shoulder, and dump me into the container we brought for him, forcing my knees to bend so I fit. I am unable to arrest my fall with my hands, and my head slams on the plastic at the bottom. Then they pile Severo and Mustang in atop me like garbage, and slam shut the crate. Severo's blood drips down my face. My own leaks from the gash on the side of my head. Too dazed to weep or move. Darrow, Mustang murmurs, are you all right? I don't answer her. You find a map? I hear Cassius ask Antonia through the crate. And a jammer for cameras, she says. I'll push. You range if you can manage. I can manage. Let's go. The jammer pops and the grav rig moves, taking us along with them. If Severo and Mustang were not atop me, I could crouch and put my back into the lid. But their weight pins me down in the small container. It's hot. Smells like sweat. Hard to breathe. I'm helpless in here. Unable to stop them as they use the path I cleared for Cassius. Unable to stop them as they push us across the deserted hangar, up the ramp, into the ship, and begin pre-flight checks.
Shuttle S-129, you are clear for departure. Stand by for pulse shield deactivation,
the flight officer says over the comm from the distant bridge as the engines prime.
You are go for launch.
Out from the belly of the warship, my enemies smuggle me away from the comfort of my friends, the safety of my people, and the might of my army as it prepares for war. I hold my breath, expecting Orion's voice to come over the comm, to ground the ship, for Ripwings to shoot her engines out. None do. Somewhere, my mother will be making tea, wondering where I am, if I am safe. I pray she cannot feel this pain across the void, this fear that consumes me despite all my vaunted strength and foolish bluster. I'm afraid, despite what I know. Not just for myself, but for Mustang. I hear Antonia and Cassius speaking beyond the crate. Cassius has broadcast an emergency signal from the craft. A few moments later, a cold voice crackles over the comm.
Sarpedon Shuttle, this is the LDC assault runner Kronos. You have transmitted an Olympic distress signal. Please identify yourself.
Kronos, this is the morning night. Clearance code 787 Echo Alpha 91227. I have escaped from imprisonment aboard the enemy's flagship and am requesting escort and docking clearance. Antonia Au Severus Julii is with me. We have valuable cargo. The enemy is in pursuit.
There's a pause. Register, code accepted. Hold on the comm. The next voice you hear will be the Protean Knights. A moment later, Aja's voice rumbles through the ship, filling me with dread. So she did survive the waste to find her way back home.
Cassius, you're alive.
For now.
What is your cargo?
The Reaper, Virginia, and the body of Ares, Antonia says excitedly.
The body. I want to see them.
Boots thud toward my container. The top opens and Cassius hauls Mustang out. Then he hauls me out and tosses me to the ground before the hologram. Small and dark in the holographic projector, Aja watches us with otherworldly calm. Antonia keeps Severo's gun trained on my head as Cassius pulls up Severo's head by his mohawk to show his face.
Gory hell, Bologna.
Aja says, excitement entering her voice.
Gory hell. You've done it.
The Sovereign will want to see you in the Citadel. Before I do, I need you to assure me that no harm will come to Virginia.
What are you talking about?
Antonia asks, wary how close Cassius stands near her with his razor.
She's a traitor.
And she'll be imprisoned, Cassius says. Not executed, not tortured. I need your word, Aja, or I turn this ship around. Darrow killed your sister. Do you want vengeance or not?
You have my word, Aja says. No harm will befall her. I am sure Octavia will agree. We need her to settle things with the Rim. We're sending squadrons to intercept your pursuit. Redirect to Vector 411325.
Circle the moon and await contact from the Lion of Mars for docking instructions.
We can't clear your ship to land moonside. But Arch-Governor Augustus will be joining the Sovereign in the Citadel within the hour. I don't think he'll mind offering you a ride down.
The Arch-Governor is here, Cassius asks. I don't see his ships.
Of course he's here, Aja replies. He knew Darrow was never going to Mars. His entire fleet is on the far side of Luna, waiting for them to attack my father's. This is his trap.
Chapter 59 The Lion of Mars. Mustang and I are dragged down the cargo plank of the shuttle by obsidians in black armor, each nearly as large as Ragnar, and wearing the badge of the Lion. I try to kick up at them, but they jam 2-meter-long iron pikes into my stomach, electrocuting me. My muscles cramp, electricity screaming through me. They toss me down to the deck, pulling me up by my hair, so I'm on my knees, staring down at the body of Severo. Mercifully, his eyes are shut, his mouth pink from smeared blood. Mustang tries to rise. A muffled thump as an obsidian hits her in the stomach, putting her back on her knees, gasping for breath. Cassius has been forced to his knees as well. Antonia joins Lilith, who stands before us in black armor, a screaming gold skull on either shoulder, and another in the center of the breastpiece. Down her sides are human rib bones embedded in the armor, the first bone rider in all her barbaric finery. The jackal Severo. Head shaved. Quiet eyes sunken in a small, pinched face that likes little of what it sees in the world. Behind her tower 10 young peerless Skard, heads shaved like hers for war.
Scan them, she orders.
What the hell is this? Cassius asks.
Jackal's orders.
Lilith watches carefully as the golds scan me. Cassius suffers the indignity as Lilith continues.
Boss doesn't want tricks.
I have the Sovereign's warrant, he says. We're to take the Reaper and Virginia to the Citadel.
Understood. We received the same orders. Bound there soon.
She motions Cassius to stand as her men clear them. No bugs or devices or radiation tracking. Cassius dusts his knees off. I remain on mine as Lilith peers at Severo, who one of the obsidians has dragged down the ramp. She feels his pulse and smiles.
A fine kill, Bologna.
One bone rider, a lofty, striking man with blazing eyes and a statue's cheekbones, makes a little cooing noise. Tattooed fingers with painted nails tap his bottom lip.
How much for Barker's bones? He asks.
Not for sale, Cassius replies. The man flashes an arrogant smile.
Everything's for sale, my good man.
10 million credits for a rib.
No.
100 million. Come now, Bologna. My title, Legate Valiae Wrath, is Morning Knight,
You may address me as Sir or not at all. Ares' body is property of the state. It's not mine to sell.
But if you ask me about it again, I will have more than words with you, sir.
Will you have a rut? Tactus' elder brother asks. Is that what you mean?
I've never met the annoyingly aristocratic creature before, and I'm glad for it. Tactus seems the better of the bunch.
You gory damn savage, Mustang says through bloody teeth.
Savage? Tactus' brother asks. Such a pretty mouth. That's not how you should use it.
Cassius takes a step toward the man. The other bone riders reach for their blades.
Tharsis, shut up.
Lilith tilts her head, listening to a comm in her ear as he returns to her side, lifting his nose.
Yes, my liege, she says into her comm. Barker is dead. I checked.
Antonia steps forward.
Is that Adrius? Let me speak with him.
She holds up a hand to the taller woman.
Antonia wants to speak with you.
She pauses.
He says it can wait. Tharsis, Novas, uncuff the Reaper and spread his arms.
What about Virginia?
Tharsis asks. Touch her, you die, Cassius says. That's all you need to know.
There's fear behind Cassius's eyes, even if he doesn't show it. He never would have brought her here if he could have helped it. Unlike the Sovereign's men, the Jackal is liable to do anything at any time. Aja's guarantee of safety suddenly feels very frail. Why would the Sovereign send us here? No one will touch your prizes, Lilith says.
Voice that eerie one note.
Except the Reaper.
I'm to deliver him,
we know. But my master requires compensation for past grievances. The Sovereign granted him permission while you were landing. Precautionary measures.
She flashes her data pad. Cassius reads the order and goes a little pale, looking back at me.
Now may we proceed, or do you care to fuss further?
Cassius has no choice. He depresses the remote. The metal cuffs locking my hands to my chest open. Tharsis and Novas are there to grab my arms and haul them to the sides, wrapping their whip-form razors around each wrist, pulling taut till my shoulders grind in their sockets.
You're going to let them do this?
Mustang snarls at Cassius.
What happened to your honor? Is it as false as the rest of you?
He's about to say something, but she spits at his feet. Antonia smiles repugnantly, captivated by the sight of me in pain. Lilith takes my razor from Cassius and walks away toward the ripwings that escorted us into the hangar. There she holds my sling blade up into one of the smoldering engines.
Tell me, Reaper, did you piddle my baby brother? Is that why he was so besotted?
Tharsis asks as we wait. His perfumed locks fall over his eyes. He alone has not shaved his head.
Well, you're not the first to plow that field, if you catch my flow.
I stare straight ahead.
Is he right or left-handed?
Lilith calls over.
Right,
Cassius replies.
Pollux, tourniquet,
Lilith instructs. I realize what they intend, and my blood runs cold. It feels like it's happening to someone else. Even when the rubber tightens around my right forearm and the needle pricks of sensation tingle through the tips of my fingers. Then I hear my enemy. The clicking of his black boots. The delicate shift in everyone's mannerisms. The fear. The bone riders part to watch their master enter out of the mouth of the main hall to the hangar bay, flanked by a dozen more towering gold bodyguards with shaved heads. Each tall as Victra, gold skulls laugh on their collars, on the handles of their razors. Bones rattle on their shoulders, finger joints taken from their enemies. taken from Lorne, from Fichtner, from my howlers. These are the killers of my time. Their arrogance drips from them, and they look at me, and it isn't hate I see in their violent eyes, but a fundamental absence of empathy. I told the jackal I didn't hate him. That was a lie. It's all I feel, watching him walk across the deck, the pistol he killed my uncle with hanging on a magnetic strip holster on his thigh, his armor gold, roaring with gold lions, human ribs implanted along the sides of the torso, each carved with details I cannot make out. Hair combed and parted on the side, his silver stylus in his hand, twirling, twirling. Antonia takes a step toward him, but stops herself when she sees he's walking to Severo, and not to her. Good. The bones are intact. After he's examined Severo's bloody body, he stands over his sister. Hello, Virginia. Nothing to say. What is there to say? She asks through gritted teeth. What words have I for a monster? He takes her jaw between his forefingers, causing Cassius's hand to drift to his razor. Lilith and the Bone Riders would cut him to pieces if he even drew it. It is us against the world, the jackal says softly. Do you remember telling me that? No. We were young. Mother had just died. I couldn't stop crying. And you said you'd never leave me. But then Claudius would invite you somewhere, and you'd forget all about me. And I'd stay home in a big old house and cry, because I knew even then I was alone. He taps her nose. These next hours are going to test who you are as a person, sister. I'm excited to see what's beneath all the bluster. He moves on to me, loosening my muzzle. Even on my knees, my physicality dwarfs him, 50 kilograms heavier. Still, his presence is like the sea, strange and vast and dark and full of hidden depths and power. His silence, his roar. I see his father in him now. He tricked me, guessing my play on Luna. And now I'm afraid all I've done is going to unravel. And here we are again, he says. I do not reply. Do you recognize these? He runs his stylus down the ribs in his armor, coming closer so I can see the details. My dear father thought a man's deeds make him. I rather think it's his enemies. Do you like it? He steps even closer. One of the ribs shows a helmet with a spiked sunburst. Another rib shows a head in a box. The jackal is wearing Fichtner's ribcage. Anger roars out of me, and I try to bite his face, bellowing like a wounded animal, startling Mustang. I strain against the men holding me, trembling with rage, as the jackal watches me squirm. Cassius stares at the ground, avoiding Mustang's gaze. My voice croaks out of me, hardly my own. That deeper demon only the jackal can summon from me. I'm going to skin you, I say. Bored of me, he rolls his eyes and snaps his fingers. Put the muzzle back on. Tharsis binds my mouth. The jackal opens his arms as if welcoming two long-lost friends to a party. Cassius! Antonia! He says. Heroes of the hour! My dear! What happened? He asks when he sees Antonia's face. They were lovers during my imprisonment. Sometimes I'd smell her on him as he came to visit me before the box. Or she'd drag a nail along his neck as she passed. He goes close to her now, taking her jaw in his hand, tilting her head to examine the damage done to her.
Did Darrow do this?
My sister, she corrects, disliking his examination. She mourned her face in our captivity more than she mourned her own mother's death. The bitch will pay.
And I'll have it fixed, don't worry.
She pulls her head back from him.
Stop,
the jackal says sharply.
Why fixed?
It's disgusting.
Disgusting? My dear, scars are what you are. They tell your story.
This is Victor's story, not mine.
You're still beautiful.
He pulls her down gently by her chin and kisses her lips delicately. He doesn't care for her. Like Mustang said, we're just sacks of meat to him. But while Antonia's as wicked a thing as I've ever met, she wants to be loved, to be valued. The jackal knows how to use that.
This was Barker's, Antonia says, handing the jackal Severo's pistol.
The jackal runs a thumb over the howling wolves engraved in the hilt.
Fine work, he says.
He strips his own gun from his magnetic holster and tosses it to a bodyguard before holstering Severo's. Of course he takes my friend's pistol as a trophy. His data pad flashes, and he holds up a hand for silence.
Yes, Imperator?
The grotesque Ash Lord appears in the air before the jackal as a disembodied gigantic head. Dark gold eyes peer out from beneath twin thickets of eyebrows. His jowls hang over the high black collar of his uniform.
Augustus, the enemy is underway. Torch ships in front.
They're coming for him, Cassius says.
How many? The jackal asks.
More than 60. Half bearing the red fox.
Do you wish me to spring the trap?
Not yet. I will assume command of your ships.
You know the arrangement.
The Ash Lord's wide mouth makes a straight line.
I do. You are to continue to join the Sovereign as planned. Escort the Morning Knight and his package to the Citadel. My daughter will take custody of him there. Go now, for gold.
For gold.
The head disappears. The jackal glances over to the obsidians who pulled me down the cargo ramp.
Slaves, attend to Preta Lysinos on the bridge. You are no longer needed.
The obsidians leave without question. When they are gone, he eyes the 30 bone riders. The Morning Knight has given us an opportunity to win this war today. The Telemannuses will come for my sister. The Howlers and the Sons of Ares will come for the Reaper. They will not have them. It is upon our shoulders to deliver them to the Sovereign and her strategists in the Citadel. He addresses Antonia and Cassius. Set aside your little grievances. Today we are gold. We can bicker when the rising is ash. Most of you lived the darkness of the caves with me. You watched by my side as this creature stole what was ours. They will take everything from us. Our homes, our slaves, our right to rule. Today we fight to keep what is ours. Today we fight against the dying of our age. They lean into his words, awaiting his orders hungrily. It's terrifying to see the cult he's built around himself. He's taken bits of me, of my speaking pattern, and transposed it onto his own behavior. He continues to evolve. The jackal turns from his men as Lilith brings back my sling blade, red hot from the engine's heat, and hands it to him, hilt first.
Lilith, you're to stay with the fleet.
You're sure?
You're my insurance plan.
Yes, my liege. Antonia's not sure what they're talking about, and she doesn't like it one bit. The jackal twirls my razor in his hand, and then, looking between me and Mustang, he's struck by a thought. How long were you imprisoned by Darrow, Cassius?
4 months.
4 months?
Then I believe you should do the honors.
He flips the red-hot razor to Cassius, who smoothly catches it by its hilt.
Cut off Darrow's hand.
The Sovereign wants him
alive, yes. And he will be.
But she doesn't want him coming into our bunker with his sword arm attached to his body, now does she?
We're to take all his weapons. New to the beast, and let's be on our way.
Unless there's a problem.
No problem, Cassius says, stepping forward. He lifts high the razor, metal throbbing with heat.
Is this what you've become?
Mustang asks.
Cassius suffers her gaze, shame on his face.
Look at me, Darrow, Mustang says. Look at me. I will myself to forget the blade, to watch her, taking strength from her. But as the superheated metal cleaves through the skin and bone of my right wrist, I forget her. I scream in pain, looking back where my hand was, to see a stump lazily dripping blood through charred capillaries. Smoke from my burning flesh slithers into the air, and through the agony I can see the jackal picking my hand up from the ground and holding it in the air, his newest trophy.
Hic sunt leones, he says. Hic sunt leones,
echo his men.
Chapter 60. Dragon's Maw. I think of my uncle as I cradle the charred stump of my right arm, shivering from pain. Is he with my father now? Does he sit with Io by a wood fire, listening to the birds?
Do they watch me? Blood weeps through the blackened flesh at my wrist. The pain is blinding, overtaking my entire body. I'm strapped beside Mustang into a seat in two parallel rows in the back of the military assault craft, amidst 30 bone riders. The overhead light pulses an alien green. The ship shudders from turbulence. Luna is in storm. Huge thunderheads swaddling the cities. Black towers penetrating the murky clouds. All along the rooftops, motes of light dance from the headlamps of oranges and high reds, my own brethren, who slave under the military yoke, preparing weapons that will fell their Martian kin. Brighter floodlamps bathe military scenes. Black shapes trimmed with evil red beacons zip and float between towers as squadrons of ripwings patrol the sky, and golds in grav boots jump between towers kilometers apart, checking on defenses, preparing for the storm above, saying last words to friends, schoolmates, to lovers. Passing the Elorian Opera House, I see a line of golds perched on its highest crenellation, staring up at the sky, their glorious war helms spiked with horns, so they look like a troop of gargoyles balanced there, silhouetted by lightning, waiting for hell to rain. We drive toward the cauldron of clouds that swirls around the highest skyscrapers. Beneath the cloud layer, the interlocking skin of cityscape is quiet, dark in anticipation of orbital bombardment, except for the veins of flame that bleed across the horizon from riots in Lost City. Flashing emergency vehicles drive toward the blazes. The city has gathered its breath for hours, for days, and, with exhalation bare moments away, her seams strain and her lungs stretch to bursting. We taxi onto a circular landing pad, in atop the Sovereign spire. There, Azure and a cohort of Praetorians meet us. The Bone Riders unload with grav boots before we land, covering the craft as it settles onto the pad. Cassius comes out,
manhandling me along. He drags Severo with his other hand like a deer carcass. Antonia shoves Mustang along. The weary winter rain of the city moon drips down Aja's dark face. Steam rises from her collar, and a brilliant white smile slashes the night.
Morning, night. Welcome home. The Sovereign awaits.
A kilometer beneath the surface of the moon, the great gravlift known only in military myth as the Dragon Maw stops,
hissing open to lead down a dimly lit concrete hall
to another door emblazoned with the pyramid of the Society. There, blue light scans Aja's irises. The pyramid fractures in half, gears and huge pistons whirring. Technology here, older than the citadel above, ancient from a time when Earth stood the only enemy Luna knew, and the great American railguns were the fear of all Luneborn. It's a testament to the architecture and the discipline of the Praetorians that the great bunker of the Sovereign has not had to change substantially for more than 700 years.
I wonder if Fitchner knew its inner workings. Doubtful. Seems a secret Aja would hoard. But I wonder if she even knows all the secrets of this place. Tunnels to the left and right of the narrow hall we pass through are long ago collapsed, and I can't help but wonder who once walked through them, who collapsed them, and why. We pass heavily guarded rooms, aglow with hollow lights. Synced blues and greens lying back in tech beds, IVs hooked into their bodies as data streams through their brains via uplink nodes embedded in their skulls, eyes lost to some distant plane. It's the central nervous system of the Society. Octavia can wage a war from here, even if the moon falls to ruin around her. The Obsidians here wear black helmets with draconic-shaped skulls and dark purple on their body armor. Gold letters spelling Cohors Nihil wind along the short swords at their sides. Zero Legion. I've never heard of them, but I see what they guard. One last door of solid, unadorned metal, the deepest refuge of the Society. It dilates open with a groan, and only then, a year and a half since I jumped out the back of her assault shuttle, do I see the silhouette of the Sovereign. Her patrician voice echoes down the hall.
Jonas, who cares about civilian casualties? Does the sea ever run out of salt? If they manage an iron rain, you shoot them down, whatever the cost. The last thing we desire is for the Obsidian Horde to land here and link with the riots in Lost City.
The ruler of all I've ever fought against stands in a depressed circle at the center of a large gray and black room, bathed in blue light from the Praetors and Ashlord who surround her in holographic form. There's more than 40 in a semicircle, the veterans of her wars. Pitiless creatures, watching me enter the room with the dark, smug contentment of cathedral statues, as if they always knew it would come to this, as if they earned this end of mine and didn't luck into it just as they lucked into their birth. They know what my capture means. They've been broadcasting it non-stop to my fleet, trying to take our comms with hacking attacks, to spread the word among my ships, spreading it to Earth, to quell the uprisings there, pimping the signal to the core to forestall any more civil unrest. They'll do the same with my execution. The same with Severo's dead body. And maybe Mustang, despite the deal Cassius thinks he's struck. Look what befalls those who rise against, they will say. Look how even these mighty beasts fall before gold. Who else can stand against them? No one. Their grip will tighten. their reign will strengthen. If we lose today, a new generation of gold will rise with vigor unseen since the fall of Earth. They will see the threat to their people, and they will breed creatures like Aja and the Jackal by the thousands. They'll build new institutes, expand their military, and throttle my people. That is the future that could be. The one Fichtner feared the most. The one I fear is coming. As I watch the Jackal move past me into the room.
His obsidians are not trained in extraplanetary warfare, one of the Praetors is saying.
You want to tell that to Fabii? The Sovereign asks.
Or perhaps to his mother.
She's with the other senators who I had to corral in the chamber before they could flee like little flies and take their ships with them.
Politico cravens, someone murmurs.
Aside from the glowing holographs, the room is occupied by a small host of martial golds. More than I expected. 2 Olympic knights, 10 Praetorians, and Lysander. 10 years of age now, he has grown nearly half a foot since last I saw him. He carries a data pad to make copious notes of his grandmother's conversation, and smiles to Cassius as we enter, watching me with the wary interest you'd watch a tiger through duroglass. His crystal gold eyes take in my bindings, Aja, and my missing hand, mentally tapping the glass with a nail to see just how thick it is.
The 2 Olympic knights greet Cassius quietly as we enter, so as not to disturb the Sovereign in her debriefing, though she's noted my presence with an emotionless glance. Both knights are heavily armored and ready to defend their Sovereign.
Above the Sovereign, a globular hollow dominates the domed ceiling of the room, showing the moon in perfect detail. The Ash Lord's fleet is spread out like a screen to cover Luna's dark side, where the Citadel is, like a concave shield. The battle is well underway. But my forces have no way of knowing that the Jackal is just waiting to swing around their flank and hammer them against the Ash Lord's anvil.
If only I could reach Orion, she might find some way to salvage this.
The Jackal quietly takes a seat to the side, patiently watching the Ash Lord give instructions to a sphere of torch ships.
Cassius, you gory damn hound,
the Truth Knight says, voice a deep baritone, his eyes narrow and Asiatic. He's from Earth, and he's more compact than us Martians.
Is it really him?
Bones and heart. Took him from his flagship,
Cassius says, kicking me to my knees and hauling back my head by my hair so they can better see my face. He tosses several on the ground, and they inspect the kill. The Joy Knight shakes his head. He's thinner than Cassius and twice again as aristocratic, from an old Venusian family. Met him once at a duel on Mars.
Augustus, too? Don't you just have all the luck? And Aja bagged the obsidian. Fear and love are going to get Victra and that white witch.
I'd kill to snag Victra, Truth says, walking around me. That'd be a dance. Say, didn't you bed her, Cassius?
I never kiss and tell.
Cassius nods to the battle.
How do we fare?
Better than Fabii. They're tenacious, hard to pin down, keep trying to close so they can use their obsidian, but the Ash Lord's keeping them at a distance. The Arch-Governor's fleet will be the hammer that wins this.
They're already coming around their flank. See?
The knight looks longingly at the hollow. Cassius notices.
You could always join, Cassius says. Order a shuttle.
That would take hours, Truth replies. We've 4 knights in engagement already. Someone has to protect Octavia, and my ships are being held in reserve, protecting the Dayside. If they make landfall, which is doubtful at this point, we'll need martial men on the ground.
We'll have to wash his face.
What?
Barker's face. It's too bloody. We'll make the broadcast soon, if we're not hacked again. Saboteurs were wrecking operations. More of Quicksilver's boys. All sorts of tech-head democratic filth with delusions of grandeur. But we hit one of their dens last night with a lurcher squad. Best way to stop a hacker? Hot metal, Joy adds.
The enemy is brave. I'll give them that,
the Ash Lord is saying in the center of the room, his hologram twice again the width of his adjuncts.
Cutting off their escape, but still they're standing toe-to-toe.
He's on a corvette in the back of his fleet, his signal being rerouted through dozens of other ships. The Ash Lord's fleet moves with beautiful precision, never allowing my ships within 50 kilometers. Roke cared about casualties. Cared about not destroying the beautiful 300-year-old ships I'd captured. The Ash Lord has no such restraint. He thuggishly smashes ships to oblivion. Damn their heritage, damn the lives, damn the expense. He's a destroyer. Here, with his back to the wall, he will win at all cost. It aches to see my fleet suffer.
Report when you have further news, the Sovereign says. I want Daxo out Telemannus alive, if possible. All others are expendable, including his father and the Julii.
Yes, my liege.
The old killer salutes and disappears. With a tired sigh, the Sovereign turns to look at her mourning knight and extends her arms as if greeting a long-lost child.
Cassius.
She embraces him after he bows, kissing his forehead with the same familiarity she once had for Mustang.
My heart broke when I heard what happened on the ice. I thought you were slain.
Aja was right to think I was. But I'm sorry it took so long for me to return from the dead, my liege. I had unfinished business to attend.
So I see,
the Sovereign says, caring little for me. Focusing on Mustang instead.
I do believe you've won the war, Cassius. The both of you.
She nods without smile to the jackal.
Your ships will make this a short battle.
It is our pleasure to serve, the jackal replies with a knowing smile.
Yes, the Sovereign says in a strange, almost nostalgic way. Her fingers traced the scars on Cassius's broad neck. Did they hang you?
Oh, they tried. It didn't quite take. He grins.
You remind me of Lorne when he was young.
I know she once said to Virginia that she reminded her of herself. The affection is more real than the jackal has for his men, but she's still a collector. Still using love and loyalty as a shield to protect herself. The Sovereign gestures to me, wrinkling her nose at the metal muzzle around my face.
Do you know what he's planning? Anything that will compromise our endgame? From what I glean, he's planning an attack on the Citadel.
Cassius, stop! Mustang snaps. She doesn't care about you.
And you do?
The Sovereign asks.
We know exactly what you care about, Virginia,
and what you'll do to get it.
By air or ground?
The jackal asks.
The attack.
Ground, I believe.
Why didn't you mention this in space?
You were more concerned with chopping off Darrow's hand. The jackal ignores the barb.
How many claw drills are there on Luna?
None working. Not even in the abandoned mines, the Sovereign says. We made sure of that.
If he has a team coming, it'll be Volaris and Julii, the jackal says. They're his best weapons, and helped him take the Moonbreaker.
Volaris is the Obsidian, the Sovereign asks.
Yes?
Queen of the Obsidian, Mustang says. You should meet her. You'd remind Sephi of her mother.
Queen of the Obsidian?
They are united?
The Sovereign asks Cassius warily.
Is that right?
My politico said pan-tribal leadership was impossible.
And they were wrong, Cassius says.
Antonius seizes a moment to stand out in the Sovereign's eyes.
It's only the Obsidian and Darrow's fold, my liege, an alliance of the southern tribes.
The Sovereign ignores her.
I don't like it.
We have hundreds of Obsidians in the Citadel alone.
They're loyal, Aja says.
How do you know? Cassius asks. Are any from Mars? Octavia looks to Aja for confirmation.
Most, Aja admits. Even Zero Legion. Martian Obsidians are the best.
I want them out of the bunker, Octavia says. Now. One of the Praetorians moves to do her bidding.
Is she as formidable as her brother?
Aja asks Cassius.
Worse, Mustang says from her knees with a laugh. Far worse and far brighter. She fights with a pack of warrior women. She has sworn a blood oath to find you, Aja, to drink your blood and use your skull as her chalice in Valhalla. Sephi is coming, and you cannot stop her.
Aja and Octavia exchange a wary look.
They would have to land first before making an assault on the Citadel, Aja says. It's impossible.
How are they coming? Cassius asks me. I shake my head and laugh at him behind my muzzle. Aja kicks the stump of my right hand. I almost black out as I curl around the wound in pain.
How are they coming?
Cassius asks. I don't reply. Emotions to the Joy Knight. Hold out his other arm. Joy Knight grabs my left arm and pulls it out.
How are they coming?
He asks not me, but Mustang. I will cut off his other hand if you do not tell me. Followed by his feet and nose and eyes.
How is Volaris coming?
You're going to kill him anyway, Mustang sneers. So fuck you.
How slowly he dies is up to you, Cassius says. Who said they didn't already land?
Mustang asks.
What?
They came in the grain ships from Earth, complements of Quicksilver. Landed hours ago. And they're pressing for the Citadel now. 10,000 strong. Didn't you know?
10,000?
Lysander murmurs from his chair to the side of the hollow pit. His grandmother's Dawn Scepter lies on the table before him. A meter-long length of gold and iron, it's tipped with the triangle of the Society, and the withered heart of the Obsidian warlord who led the Dark Revolt nearly 500 years ago.
The legions are deployed to halt an invasion. The Obsidians will overrun our defenses before they can return.
I will make ready the Praetorians and recall 2 legions, Aja says, striding for the door.
No!
Octavia stands motionless, thinking.
No, Aja. You stay with me.
She turns to the Praetorian captain.
Legatus, go reinforce the surface. Take your platoon. There's no need for them here. I have my knights. Any ship approaching the Citadel should be fired upon. I don't care if it claims to carry the Ashlord himself. Do you understand?
It will be done. Legatus and the remaining Praetorians rush out, leaving the room deserted, save for Cassius, the 3 Olympic Knights, Antonia, the Jackal, the Sovereign, 3 Praetorian guards, and us prisoners. Aja presses her palm into a console near the door. The sanctum seals behind the Praetorians. A second, thicker door appears from the walls in a corkscrew, slowly locking us off from the world beyond.
I'm sorry, Aja,
Octavia says, as the woman returns to her side. I know you want to be with your men, but we already lost Moira. I couldn't risk losing you, too.
I know, Aja replies,
but her disappointment is obvious. The Praetorians will deal with the Horde. Shall we attend the other matter?
Octavia glances over to the jackal, and he gives her the barest of nods.
Severus Julii, come forward, Octavia says.
Antonia does, surprised to have been singled out. A hopeful smile works its way onto her lips. No doubt she is to receive a commendation for her efforts today. She clasps both hands behind her back and waits before her sovereign.
Tell me, Praetor, you were conscripted to join the Sword Armada as it subjugated the Moon Lords in June of this year, were you not?
Antonia frowns.
My liege, I do not understand. It's a fairly simple question. Answer it to the best of your abilities.
I was. I led my family's ships and the 5th and 6th Legions.
Under the pro tem command of Rogue Ao Fabii?
Yes, my liege.
Then tell me, how is it that you are still alive and your Imperator is not?
I only barely managed to escape the battle, Antonia says, seeing the danger in the line of questioning.
Her voice modulates accordingly. It was a terrible calamity, my liege. With the Howlers hidden in Thebe, Roke, Imperator Fabii, fell into the trap twofold, through no fault of his own. Any would have done the same. I made effort to rescue his command, to rally our ships, but Darrow had already reached his bridge, and torch ships were burning all around us. We did not know friend from foe. It's haunted my dreams, the sounds of the obsidian horde pouring through their ships.
Liar! Mustang snorts a derision.
And so you retreated?
At grave cost, yes, my liege. I saved as many ships for the Society as I could. I saved my men, knowing they would be needed for the battle to come. It was all I could do.
It was a noble thing, saving so many,
the Sovereign says.
At least it would be, if it were true.
I beg your pardon?
I don't believe I have ever stuttered, girl. I do, however, believe you fled the battle, abandoning your post and your Imperator to the enemy.
You are calling me a liar, my liege.
Obviously, Mustang says.
I will not stand aspersions against my honour.
Antonia snaps at Mustang, puffing up her chest.
It is beneath...
Oh, be still, child,
the Sovereign says.
You are in deep waters here, with larger fish than you. You see, others escaped the battle. Others who transmitted their battle analytics to us so we would know what happened, so we could assess the calamity and see how Antonia of the Severus Julii disgraced her name and lost us the battle, abandoning her praetor when he called for aid, fleeing for the belt to save her own hide, when she then lost her ships.
Fabii lost the battle, she says vindictively.
Not I. Because his allies abandoned him. Aja purrs. He might still have saved his command had you not thrown his formation to chaos.
Fabii made mistakes, the Sovereign says. But he was a noble creature, and as loyal a servant to his colour. He was even honourable enough to take his own life, to accept that he had failed, and to pay justly for it, and ensure he would not be interrogated or bartered. His last act in destroying the rebel docks was the act of a hero. An iron gold. But you... You scurrilous craven. You fled like a little girl who pissed her white day dress. You abandoned him to save yourself. Now you slander him in front of all. In front of his friend.
She gestures protectively to Cassius.
Your men saw the reptile underneath. That is why they turned on you. Why you lost your ships to your better sister.
I would see whoever lays these claims against me in the bleeding place, Antonia says, trembling with anger. My honor will not be smeared by faceless, jealous creatures. It is sad that they would manufacture evidence to smear my good name. No doubt they have ulterior motives. Perhaps intentions against my company, or my holdings. Or they seek to undermine gold as a whole. Adrius, tell the sovereign how ridiculous this all is.
But Adrius remains quiet.
Adrius?
I'd rather have the loyalty of a dog than that of a coward, he says. Lilith was right. You are weak, and that is dangerous. Antonia looks about like a drowning woman, feeling the water coming over her head, undertow pulling her down, nothing to grab onto, nothing to save her. Aja swells behind her like a dark wave as Octavia denounces her formally.
Antonia aus Severus Julii, matron of House Julii and praetor first class of the 5th and 6th legions, by the power invested in me by the compact of the society, I find you guilty of treason and dereliction of duty in a time of war, and hereby sentence you to death. You bitch! Antonia hisses at her. Then to the jackal, you can't afford to kill me. Aegis, please.
But she has no ships anymore. No face. Tears stream out of swollen eyes as she seeks some hope here, some way out. There is none. And when she meets my gaze, she knows what I am thinking. Reap what you sow. This is for Victra and Lear and Thistle and all the others she would sacrifice so she could live.
Please,
she whimpers. But there is no mercy here. Aja grasps Antonia's neck from behind. She shivers in horror, shrinking to her knees, not even attempting to fight, as the huge woman slowly closes her hands and begins to strangle her to death. Antonia snorts, wriggles, and takes a full minute to die. When she has, Aja completes the execution by snapping her neck with a violent twist and tossing her atop Severo's corpse.
What an odious creature,
the sovereign says, turning from Antonia's body.
At least her mother had spine. Cassius, your shoes are filthy.
Blood crusts the rubber soles of his prison slippers and spatters the green jumpsuit's legs.
There's a complex of sleeping quarters through there. A kitchen, showers. Clean yourself. My valet has been attempting to foist a meal on me for hours. I'll have him serve it here for you. You won't miss the battle. The Ash Lord has promised it will last another several hours, at the very least. Lysander, will you show him the way?
I won't leave your side, my liege, Cassius says very nobly. Not till this is through, and these monsters are put down. The Truth Knight rolls his eyes at the display.
You're a good lad,
she says, before turning toward me.
Now, it's time we dealt with the red.